It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Stacey Higginbotham's here. I'm here. We've got a great show for you, including, yes, we'll do the Google changelog this week with some interesting things, including reading to a dog. We'll talk about how Amazon got back up and running. And would you like to work at home forever? Twitter's employees will. It's all coming up next on Twig. This Week in Google comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 559, recorded Wednesday, May 13th, 2020. Harry pocketed it. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. WWT's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab, with more than $500 million of equipment, including solutions from key partners like Intel Corporation, and it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all it offers, go to wwt.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest in the Googleverse with Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism. Wait a minute, let me get my crib sheet here. The Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, boss. How are you?
I'm good. You got a whiteboard. Have you been teaching from your...
So I did a... event on journalism education with South Africa at 6 a.m.
Wow.
And who knew that the sun rises just that way?
Oh, now we know.
So I had to put the whiteboard there this morning. I've been on Zoom nonstop since then. I'll get rid of it at some point.
Do you get Zoom fatigue? I got Zoom fatigue the other day.
Today I do. Yeah. Oh, man.
It's awful. Also with us, Stacey Higginbotham from StaceyOnIoT.com and the podcast with Kevin Toefel. So do you get Zoom fatigue, Stacey?
I do. Well, I get talking fatigue. So like today I'll do this show.
I do my show.
Yeah, I'm an introvert. Hardcore.
Well, it's funny because of the way we do this, I don't get fatigue from doing this. I mean, I do this all day, you know, for the last 15 years. But the minute I'm starting to, you know, I did 3 Zoom calls on Friday. We had a college reunion, which was really fun, with about 15 people from Trumbull College. That was really, really fun. And then, but before that, I had a family meeting, and before that, I had another conference call for Twit. And it was like, by the end of the day, I was like exhausted.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
It wasn't as much talking as I do probably in a normal day.
I think it's very hard to do eye contact, and you are thinking a lot more about how to connect with people.
Right.
And you're also like, when we're talking, like if we were in person, I wouldn't be always looking and focused at the screen.
Right.
I would probably be like doing other things.
But you get that when you were doing the show.
I do, but that's just because I don't talk that often.
Right.
See, my husband and I can actually have an entire meal and not say a word.
I love that.
Would you rather have a Zoom call or an old-fashioned phone conference call?
A Zoom call.
Phone.
Yeah, same here. Ooh. Really?
I love talking to people on the phone because I can walk. I can process better. As long as it's interactive. If someone's just talking at me, then I don't really care.
This is pretty easy for me because I'm not looking at you. I'm not thinking. I'm not really doing anything. I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's my native habitat, but I'm just very relaxed. And
it's also, Leo, I think it's about the distance to the screen and the camera.
That might be it. Because if I was,
you've got a whole room in front of you. Yeah. You had that thing right in front of you.
Yeah, maybe that's
all day.
I was so surprised, and I feel bad for people who are living on Zoom these days.
I care too much. I think. For this show, I'm like, no, I have to make my point.
Oh,
it's
don't care
very
so much.
Important.
it's just a podcast.
Don't care so much.
So if you were a Twitter employee and you had the option, would you choose to go back to the office or would you choose not to?
It's really interesting as we are starting to come back out of our pause in many parts of this country. The big tech companies have had different reactions to this.
Right.
Jack Dorsey said, you don't ever have to come back. If you're working at home and it's working for you, stay home. Apple has already started to bring people back, saying, no, we want you to come back. Google said you don't have to come back till the end of 2020, till after the year, till 2021. I think Facebook said the same thing. So there is this, obviously there's some jobs like Jeff, who's running our board, our engineering staff, they have to be there. But there's a lot of jobs we do here that can be done from home. We didn't, in the past, we haven't liked it because we feel like, well, we don't know what's going on. We like everybody to be in the office at the same time, but I'm not in a hurry to bring people back by any means. We've already told people, you know, even if other businesses are coming back, since we're able to do business without subjecting you to health risks, we see no reason to do that.
And this is a weird question. Well, probably doesn't work because business is so different right now. But do you think your efficiency is better, worse, similar to what it was whenever it was in the office?
Yesterday, I had to yell at people for putting too many animated GIFs in the Slack. I said, guys, I can't. There's all this stuff. I can't. This is an important channel for new information. I need to see. I can't. There's too many dancing. So they knocked that off. We do have channels, though, in our Slack for fun.
Right.
Because, you know, and so people. And I think
after,
people
after
really
you
need
killed
that.
It in the main channel, yeah. Killed
Joy. Yeah, now there's all these Leo as the Grinch gifts running around that you just don't see.
I deserve them. I admit it. But we have like a staff lunch where everybody gets on the Zoom and eats their lunch, which is, I don't participate in that. Thank God I'm busy.
So can I mention my favorite story of the day?
Yes.
The fact that Google employees had to be warned not to charge their lunches at home to the expense account. They don't know what life is like having to buy lunch.
Oh my gosh, that is funny. Oh, those poor people.
Isn't that the best?
Wait a minute. That's a little bit of chutzpah. To charge your home lunch to your expense account. Well, I'm working, but they are working, right? And they used to get lunch.
They used to get lunch for
That's
free.
That's why they're doing it. But wow, the real world is so hard on tech.
Oh, it is. Yeah. So there were gifts around the office of people when as soon as they're back, they're going to eat 24 hours.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
I will say, having worked from home and virtually since 2004, I would never go into an office if I had, like, I am remote for life. I am less productive. And the best tools that we have had were Slack was excellent and allowed you to feel connected to your people.
Right.
I would go on reporting trips and I think I would never give those up. Like, I could, there's so much you do in person that you wouldn't still want to go do. But being in an office I am so much less productive when I'm in the office.
But you know, another thing, Stacey, I was thinking today. So last time I was in San Francisco, I got to see Jack Dorsey, right? Well, now, I'm going to be in San Francisco. Is Jack around? No, actually, Jack's in Tuscaloosa. He doesn't come in anymore, right?
Oh, so that's interesting.
People, the people you used to be able to meet with because you were in town may not be in town anymore.
Well,
means that you could have events. That gives actually a good rationalization for events.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. You haven't seen your own coworkers.
Yeah. Well, so we would always, and I think this is really important. If you're going to do remote work, you have to bring people in at least once or twice a year. And that's really essential to, and when you do it, you know, we got together for events, obviously, because we did events. And then we also got together for like corporate retreats.
What's it going to take to feel safe flying again?
A vaccine?
Yeah.
Herd immunity?
So. I don't know.
I think so.
I don't know if you've seen these pictures of like plexiglass dividers, like cones of silence over every seat and all sorts of crazy ideas.
I saw a restaurant that has already installed shower curtains between the tables.
Yeah. That's not really why go to a restaurant if you're going to have to sit in the shower booth? That's not fun. That's no fun at all.
I kind of like the the little greenhouses they were building
the
around
Amsterdam
for outdoors.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that would get super hot real fast in the
summer. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know, we just have to. I think the best thing to do at this point, I've decided just to take it one day at a time. I don't know. And, you know, the only responsibility I have is to our staff. And I think we've already decided we're going to encourage them to stay home as long as they feel like they can do the job at home. And that's good for me because I do come in. And, you know, I feel like I actually have a luxury because I can use this studio and I can use my studio safely. And I continue to. But one of the reasons I could do that is I don't let anybody else come in. None of the other hosts. Yeah. They all have to work from home. I might be going crazy right now if I had to work from home. I don't know if I could do it. Some shakeups in the Pixel division. This story from Nick Bastone on The Information. Apparently, the Pixel 4 was such a disappointment that Mark Lavoie, the guy we saw on stage, the photography guru, left the company last month. This is the first that exit's been reported. And Pixel general manager Mario Quiroz also left, both declined a request for comment from The Information.
Mario did Chromecast before he was in charge of the Pixel,
right? He was a longtime Googler, yeah.
Yeah, he was big.
Yeah. It's strange that Google would blame those executives for the Pixel 4. I don't think there was anything wrong with the camera on the Pixel 4, was there? No. The problem with the Pixel 4 was the price, pure and simple. Am I wrong? This was more than $1,000.
Maybe the shakeup was related to it, like they didn't want to work on something like this
cheaper
anymore.
Maybe.
I don't know.
We have the 4A coming out a little bit delayed, but imminently, right?
Well, yeah, because this right now would be Google I.O. We would have had the Google I.O. keynote yesterday.
And I would have had a phone in my hand.
And you probably would have had a 4A in your hand. You'd be down there, you know,
complaining about the lack of Pixel books.
True, but I'd be enjoying the noshes.
Yeah. Yeah, Google I.O. is a fun conference to go to. No Google I.O. They didn't even say we're going online. Microsoft's doing
its developer. They did for a while.
They did, and then they said.
And then they stopped.
Microsoft's doing its developer conference next week online. Mm-hmm. Apple is going to do its developer conference in June online. A lot of them are still continuing on, but Google said, for reasons I don't know, hey, we don't even want to do that.
Facebook just canceled.
I.O. is mostly product launches, and then on the back end is the developer stuff that most people don't really cover, the cool, fun, like, that's it. And I
the
think,
real stuff.
I don't know if you have developer accounts, but is Google still sending out information to developers for online training sessions and that sort of thing?
I don't know. This would be one for our All About Android team. I should ask Jason, et cetera. By the way, they had a great show yesterday with the head of Google Music and now YouTube Music. Explaining what's going on there. So Lavoie was the guy who talked. Remember last year, we were kind of underwhelmed by the presentation, except when Mark Lavoie stepped on stage. He was a computational photography pioneer. In fact, he met Larry Page and Sergey Brin when they were grad students at Stanford, joined Google about 6 years ago, but he had been working for Google doing projects at Stanford like Street View. He worked with Google Glass and the camera for its headset. Quiroz had been, or how, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Quiroz had been at Google since 2005, 15 years. He was the Pixel's general manager from the very beginning. So it's unclear, are these punishments? It's nobody saying. Apparently, according to Information, has such great sources. At a hardware all-hands meeting in the fall, Rick Osterloh was afraid that the Pixel 4, but this is before it was released, would be panned. He said he did not agree with some of the decisions made about the phone. In particular, disappointed with battery life. Google would not let The Information talk to Rick. So maybe, I don't know, is this this might be a change in what the Pixel 4 or the Pixel phone going forward.
Or is there a Pixel 5 or no?
Maybe there isn't even going to be a Pixel 5.
And Google's really hurt. I mean, the hardware for Google I feel so bad for these people because they have such good ideas. They have good software and then they throw it out there and it's just, they can't be Apple.
Shall I whine?
Whine. Oh. Whine away.
Did you fix your headbuds or earbuds?
No.
Headbuds?
No. Driving
still,
me nuts.
Still disconnecting when you move about.
Oh, disconnecting. It got worse. I did everything. The server, then one side of the bat, there's other people complaining that the discharges and the charge suddenly, I hardly used it. And it was all in its little case plugged in. Still one of the things, battery ran out. I went back and forth. I went ahead and decided to do an exchange, but I don't know if it's going to work.
Because Jason Howell has them and he has not had any of those problems.
Nope. He emailed me.
Oh no.
That yes.
I asked him the other day and he said no. So it must have just started.
He was on a phone. He was walking. It's oddly, it's when you're in motion and he was walking on a phone call and it did it.
Man, well, who doesn't walk on phone calls?
Right.
I mean, that's why.
Especially if you're wearing these. That's the point of wearing these is so you can walk on the phone call.
I have a bad habit. Have you ever walked too far away from the phone? Because I forget that the phone is there and I'm going and I go outside and they go, oh, hello? Hello? So carry my little tip to all of you, carry the phone with you when you go walking. Okay, well, I'm sorry that you're having that problem. Well, let us know if this exchange fixes it.
Have you worked out with them? Do you get it with music playback or just when you're talking?
He works out.
Okay. Have you listened to music while walking or do you?
I'm just teasing. I'm teasing. I joke.
I walk as fast as my old body will take me every evening. That's when I use them. And it was true on both Audible and music.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think it has something to do. So I sent them all kinds of every symptom I could find. I would scratch my nose, and the sound would go out. Scratch my nose again. Let's try to recreate it. The sound would go out. 5 minutes later, I scratch my nose. Sound goes up.
It's telling you not to touch your face, Jeff.
Oh, it's a new feature.
It's a feature, yes, not a bug.
So you're probably not happy with Google naming these updates to the Pixel Buds the feature drops because your Pixel Buds are getting audio drops.
Doing sound drops, exactly.
But they're going to update these just like they did the Pixel phones with new capabilities from time to time.
I think one capability is to fix the damn
fix
things.
It.
Yeah.
Unless it's a hard one.
I was ready.
Headphones had that problem.
Ready.
Oh, is that common?
But I looked. There's not, even though last time we were on, I showed the Reddit thread, which was a lot of problems. But general search on Google is not finding a lot of problems. So I'm hoping this is just a lemon unit.
You got
or maybe Google's censoring the results.
I've never had it happen with the Galaxy Buds. I've never had it happen with the AirPods, although people have had other problems with the AirPods Pro.
I've never had it happen with my Jabras. Those things are amazing.
Yeah, I love I have two sets of Jabras, which I've been very happy.
Yeah, and I was thinking I might as well get the Galaxy or the Jabra because I don't really care about having an assistant on it.
It doesn't have to be the Google one. We can still get the assistant.
And you can set up assistant your Jabras.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I work out
which Jabras do you have?
I have the 65Ts, but
that's what I have, the Elite.
The 75s are out.
Yep.
And if I'm trying to break my 65s so I can get the 75s, but they're not breaking.
65s are beautiful. They work really well. The sound quality is excellent. They're a little pricey. The Galaxy Buds are cheap. Oh, really? What is the price now?
I think they're only like $99
now.
Oh,
that's great.
But I love those things.
Yeah, me too. I have the sport model as well, which is
they're $99 at Best Buy. Sorry.
That's a good price. I would get them.
Whoa, the 75T is $179.
Yeah, get the 65. Yeah, they're fine.
Yeah,
no noise canceling.
That's what I have.
But your Pixel Buds don't have canceling, or do they?
No.
No.
And if you're not using the Translate, then puffa. There is Madam A built in. Puffa. That's
puffa?
Puffa.
Puffa?
That's French for puffa.
It's French for puffa.
Puffa.
Puffa. I think I'm going to. You think I can. Can I carry that off? Can I pull that off?
No.
Puffa. No, I don't think so. I think that's just Stacy.
Yeah.
That's Stacy Automatopoeia. Stacy Automatopoeia. Jabra 65 Elite. Let's see if you've got Google on them. That's the only thing.
I think you do. When I tap him, I think I hear a voice.
Yes. If you pair your jobber device. Yes, you should be able to get Google Assistant.
So this gets us back to this problem with the people leaving at the Pixel group. I wonder if there's hardware problems at Google.
Yes.
My 3A is a wonderful thing.
People loved the 3A, and I think that.
But I'm mad the 4A is not going to have an XL. That makes me unhappy.
Right. I don't know. It's not none of my business.
How much was the Pixel? Like, what is the goal of the Pixel? Let's ask that.
Well, that's,
has it changed?
I think that's where the confusion is. The Nexus line originally was a low cost line of pure Google hardware and software.
Right.
For developers, we thought, and also to demonstrate what a pure Android experience could be. And then they started to get aspirations when the Pixel line came out, and they got more and more expensive each year. And people started to say, well, what are you trying to do with the Pixel line? It is no longer a low-cost reference design to show you how great Android could be or for developers to use develop Android apps. You're trying to compete with Apple and Samsung. And that's the real problem, is Google has not at all kept up with either company, sales-wise, product quality-wise. The only thing.
So you don't think
the irony is the best
these phones
thing
are as
does,
good?
I think a lot of features on these phones are comparable to Apple or the Samsung fancy phones.
I think the only place it excels is the camera. LaVoie's leaving, and it is. That's the most important part, isn't it? Google's always had trouble with audio, clicking, weirdness, quality issues on all of their Pixel phones, dropout. A lot of complaints about those. Battery life is subpar compared to Samsung or Apple. So given that they're charging the same amount as Samsung and Apple charge for their flagship phones, I'm not surprised they're not selling that well. I far prefer to use pure Android than I do Samsung's version of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will buy an Android phone over a Samsung phone every day of the week just to avoid the
bloatware. the bloatware.
And a different way of thinking about the world. It's a different, here you go, Carsten, Weltanschauung.
Weltanschauung. You also, Weltanschauung.
Weltanschauung.
Yeah. You also, which is
worldview.
You also get updates more, I think, on time, more promptly. I don't know if you get them for longer. And that's the other thing Google's done that I think really has cheesed people off. But not nearly as much as people are pissed off about the new Motorola phone, which will get only one update.
Jesus.
Whoa. Not bueno.
I think that's the Motorola Edge, which is the Edge Plus is a very expensive phone. It's beautiful. It's great hardware. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, got to take it back. Motorola says, no, we'll do two updates. Two.
Yeah.
Two. So actually, if you do one a year, that's pretty much the same as Google's promising, which is 2 years of updates. Still, I think Android's got to do better than that. I mean, you could buy an Apple phone and get it updated as long as the phone, can keep up with the operating system, which is usually quite a few years, 4 or 5 years. 2 years of updates.
Dos años.
Dos años. All right. I can't believe they even said just 1 year at first.
Well, props to them for warning people in advance.
Yeah.
If you buy this, it's only good for a year.
Yeah.
And do we have any recent data on how long people are keeping their phones now? Because I've got to think.
It's more than 2 years. I think it's, the 2 years was conditioned by the carriers and the 2-year contract.
Right.
Because in Canada, where it's typically 3 years, people were perfectly happy to keep their phone for 3 years. And given the price of these flagship phones, I don't have a number, but I'm going to guess it's more like 4 years.
Yeah, and I would think even now with COVID and all of the economic uncertainty, we're going to see that number stretch.
Right.
Yes, right.
Nobody's running out to the store to spend $1,000 now.
Mm-mm. Plus, they're not using their phones as much.
Right.
No, they're using their phones a lot. Voice minutes are up.
Oh, yeah. Really? Yeah, we're starting to see some stats come out over...
Really?
Hold on.
Everything. Internet usage, streaming usage. The only one that's not up is Quibi.
April 15th.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Jeffrey Katzenberg said, it's COVID-19's fault. To which I reply, I think COVID-19's your fault. Anyway.
I think there's a little truth to that. I mean, it is designed as a commuter service where you're like hanging out.
Yeah, a strap hanger, though, because if you're driving, you're not watching it. It's only for people on the bus or waiting in line at the DMV. It seemed like a small market.
Not people that he knows.
Yeah, nobody I know. Yeah.
And waiting at the dentist's office. I mean, all of that sort of thing in the line at the grocery store, although that's the most antisocial. But, Jeff, Wi-Fi calling is up 78% and voice calls are up 29%.
Wow. Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
That's a lot.
Because you can't talk to people, so you're going to call more. I do a lot of a lot more FaceTiming, Zooming, all that stuff, but I don't think that would show up on those because I don't usually use my phone for that, but you could.
But now we're all going to be on Meet.
Oh, you want to show that? Should we do the Meet?
Oh, yeah, let's.
So Jeff and I have been sitting here on a Meet.
Now I got to find it.
I got it. You don't have to find it. Just talk. And we have turned on, at the request of our esteemed colleague, Stacey Higginbotham, we have turned on captions, which you'll find there at the bottom. And Google is using its really good engine to do captioning. And I have to say, it's doing a great job. Now, why can't I get this?
Yeah, why aren't you? I'm seeing it here.
It spelled my name correctly.
It knows Stacey Higginbotham.
Yeah.
It spelled Stacey Higginbotham?
Let's see.
It corrected me.
Yes, it did, and it spelled my name correctly.
Wow, it added an E.
Once you added the Higginbotham, because at first it was Stacy. Yeah.
So it knows how you spell it. Well, it must be. I wonder if that's because you're in our contact list.
Or just Google knows.
So we've tried various things like swearing, and it does little asterisks if you say bad words. We've also tried German.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
To which it translated, my stomach's with wrecked.
Weltanschauung.
What about a common word like Weltanschauung?
Joan. I kind of like how German's translated.
Wo ist der Bahnhof?
Volunteer Bahnhof. A new Bahnhof, oddly enough. I guess that's used enough in English.
Yeah, that's
ich hätte gern zwei Wurst und Sauerkraut, bitte.
You can't again, survivalist, when sauerkraut, Peter. But if you talk in normal English and even at a normal speed, you don't have to talk slowly. It seems to do a very good job. This is roughly how the Google Voice Assistant works, right? I mean, it's about the same. Good. Yeah.
So my question
is, we can talk at the same time too, which is amazing.
Which is really kind of crazy. I don't know how it knows, but somehow, when Jeff and I both talk at the same time, it gets both of our. Words.
And no one's going to join the call.
But this is so much better than like Google Voice. When I still get my voicemails from Google Voice, they're terrible. Why haven't
still,
they
still really?
Because the quality of this is so much better than the
That's fair.
I don't know if you want spaghetti for dinner.
Yes, and the captions there
are short spaghetti for dinner. Sell the spaghetti stock.
Short it. Anyway, I think that's pretty cool. So we didn't know about this. Apparently, it's not a new feature. We never turned on. Well, frankly, we're using Zoom. Although I have to say, at Twit, you know, Google does a funny thing because when we make calendar appointments, which we do a lot for all kinds of stuff internally and externally, it automatically sets up a Meet. With a link.
Which you can turn off, but then it comes back on sometimes.
Yeah, so it's almost like, well, I might as well use it. It's actually very clever on their part.
I've had cases where half the meeting is in Google and half the meeting is in Zoom.
Well, we've had that problem too, because if you want a Zoom meeting and you put it in the meeting note, it'll still make a meeting.
It'll still make a meeting. So an ambassador has to go over to Google land. To say, cross the bridge over here to Zoomville.
Isn't that funny?
Whoever makes the calendar invite has to turn that off. So if you're making,
I know, but it sometimes turns it back on.
People
again.
Forget to, you know, they don't even know it's happening and all of that. Hey, Jeff had a great interview, by the way, with the Unabomber, Nathan Alaback, who is also, as it turns out, little known, the voice of Steak-Um. No, he just has a very aggressive beard.
He's a wonderful guy. He's a nerd.
He was hired as their guy?
No, his,
is that really a beard?
It's a marketing company. It's a
it doesn't doesn't that look a little fake?
The beard? Oh, yeah. No, he was pulling on it.
Okay. So he
calls himself a nerd. He's a nerd.
Yeah. No,
the company Alaback had been doing food marketing stuff. And like 3 years ago, Steak-Um's came and said, you know, we're for old people like Jarvis. It's been around since the 70s when, you know, people like that ate cheesesteaks at home. And so he said, let me take over the Twitter account and give it a voice that says, well, gee, even Steak-Um says that. And a voice of sanity.
This is pre-COVID.
It's 3 years ago. This is 3 years.
Yeah.
So along comes COVID while every other advertiser is running away and to hell with them putting no COVID content on their forbidden list. They ran toward it. And he, you know, has this voice of sanity and reason and science from a frozen meat product. He's also extremely honest in this, saying, hey, folks, don't forget, I'm a marketer trying to sell you frozen meat product. It's funny. It's ironic.
It's great. We've talked about it before. It's really one of the best brands in the face of COVID of anybody. Nothing.
So I talked to him about a bunch of stuff, but what I found fascinating, which you guys will like, is that he really understands social community. He goes in and he figures out, you know, he looks at librarian Twitter and media Twitter and weird Twitter and stan Twitters of, you know, K-pop. And he listens to them and he reads them and he sees what's missing and he knows how to enter in. He knows how to have a conversation. He listens first. The reason I talked to him because it struck me as instructional for my journalism students in social journalism.
Yeah.
And he really kind of gets that gospel of listening to people, understanding with them, empathizing with them. One of the interesting things about him is that he also, his name is out there. He's Nathan Alaback. And his Twitter account is out there. So he can't really be himself because people are going to say, oh, that's the Steak-Um's
now
guy.
Steak-Um's. It's just like the Comcast guy, Comcast Frank.
Comcast Frank.
Yeah. He kind of made it hard for him. But I got a question. So in the days of Comcast Frank, Frank really did very well for Comcast by making them appear to be responsive to customer issues and complaints, something they've since given up. But it was a moment in time when it really worked well.
He was brilliant at it.
Fast forward, though, does it matter if a brand is on Twitter these days? There's some ancillary coverage you get, but most people, normal people, aren't on Twitter. And even if you are on Twitter, no matter what tweet, it goes by, right? It's not, you have to be there at the time.
I'm going to disagree. Look at another brand. Look at what Taco Bell, my favorite.
Yeah, but I'm on Twitter, so much, and I don't see Taco Bell because I don't.
But it doesn't matter because your friends will talk about it, or you're not the cool kids, but the cool kids will talk about it. There's now a Taco Bell literary magazine. Did we tell you about that?
I think it's irrelevant.
No.
I think
Taco Bell. Taco Bell Quarterly. Wait a second.
I think you're interested because you're interested in Taco Bell.
No, they made it.
I don't think it wins new customers.
Taco Bell Quarterly. Go there. Did we read this last week?
No.
Did we do this?
No.
Oh, go there. TacoBellQuarterly.org. It has nothing to do with Taco Bell. This is fan fiction, right? This is people came up. So volume 2 has Taco Bell poetry and fiction.
So disgusting.
And, oh my God, Jeff, this is where we could write our queso like fanfic.
Exactly. The Quesarita Requiem. Eating you, your voice rings my heart. A language turned into light waves, traveling at a pace to crack one's soul. It is pretty crappy. And spitting at times and swallowing and brushing my bristled chin, the light now flamencos mirror to mirror until it becomes noise again, bending and loud and rhythmless. Okay, well, never mind.
So all of this notwithstanding, does it sell more tacos?
Yeah.
It engages the people who like you I mean, that right. brands love this stuff.
That's pretty okay. That's pretty obvious.
And new people discover you.
If you're already a fan, then you're following Taco Bell or Steak'em or whatever, and so you can talk about this and blah blah blah. I just don't think it's.
But when I come along out of nowhere and I retweet Steak'ems and somebody says, "What the H? I've never what's going on?" They discover Steak'ems too.
Then they don't go to the store and buy Steak'em.
Yes, I have tons of friends because they want to reward it because it's so good. Who are buying? Now the problem here is that I would kill for it. My wife. Your wife doesn't let you go to the store, and she doesn't want me to have Steak'ems, so I can't get these Steak'ems.
There's better, like me. Better meat. If you're gonna get,
I want it.
You want a Philly cheesesteak,
little provolone and grilled onions on a roll. That and Taco Bell are the two things I miss.
Okay.
Badly.
All right. I will accept
provolone.
Your, yes.
We are having meatball paninis tonight, and they're going to be delicious.
Are you homemade, or are you going to get them out from the
homemade meatballs.
The local Bainbridge meatball vendor.
Oh, that would be nice. No, I have. I always keep meatballs in the freezer.
Ah. Our son, unaccountably, has suddenly got a Jones for meatloaf. I don't know.
Hey, that's great. Meatloaf is the easiest thing in the world. You're like, okay.
Yes, comfort food. Do you put ketchup on top?
Oh, yeah, you got to, right?
I put
A1 steak sauce on mine. It's delicious.
Oh, you fancy meatloaf.
Ooh, that's fancy. Yeah,
you're gourmet meatloaf.
That's French meatloaf.
So, okay. Okay, I just was curious because it's actually an internal conversation we have. We have a very good, very active social media presence on Twitter. We have Jerry Masako,
the
and they do a great job. But I feel like that's nice, and I guess
it's. But there's a difference, Leo. What your social media presence does is promote what you already have.
Right.
What Steak'ems does is create a persona and a voice, and an empathy with people, and irony and humor and intelligence. Right. And Taco Bell's different, but it's very similar. It created something. Taco Bell was not cool. It was ridiculed. Now Taco Bell is cool.
Taco Bell was always cool. Taco Bell is always part of your drunk eating.
I got ridiculed.
Drunk maybe, eating cool. That is.
Yeah, maybe in Texas, but I got ridiculed forever.
Oh, that's because you're a grown man.
That's because you're a grown man.
I'm sorry, Jeff. It's true.
If you were eight years old, it's understandable.
No, but it's for drunk college kids and high school kids. That's what Taco Bell's for.
I want to be young again.
You want,
but that's also what makes it cool.
Stacey won't let me.
I mean, you could be young, Jeff, if you want to turn back time.
Admittedly, the cost of one Allenback, tweeting is less than one ad on a network television
show. Well, that was the other show. One story I read said they'd basically gone through their budget, and they said, what are we going to do? And Allenback said, why don't we try this?
Yeah.
And they didn't expect. I mean, they didn't go into this thinking this is going to turn viral. But boom, one day, and it did.
Yeah.
And Steak'ems is happy. Oh, but I asked them, too, about the relationship with the brand, because I said, they got to be nervous sometimes. They said, there are things that go on the maybe you don't want to do that again list. But generally, he spent 3 years developing trust with the brand, with his client, and also developing trust between the brand and the public. And so it's kind of brilliant. He's just a nice guy. He's a musician, songwriter who decided when he got married, he said, I got to have a job.
Good for him.
So,
and he has done the thing that you really want to do, which is he's created a voice.
He really has. He's also on Twitch, by the way. He's a gamer.
What does he stream?
I don't know. Can you look him up? No, he does not stream eating. No, he games. I guess maybe. If you go to Nathan Allenback's Twitter account, you'll see his. So it's Twitter / Nathan Allenback.
He was last live 16 hours ago.
Right.
And what does he do? The history of media polarization and prominent political identities. So I guess he just comes on and talks.
Yeah, he's a bit of a autodidact. Nerd. Called himself. Yeah, he called himself a nerd.
So he just Craig chats. Newmark,
he has a great dog.
He has a great dog.
He does.
No, that's not a great dog. That's somebody else. That's another person.
No, there's a dog. Do you not see the dog?
Oh yeah, there's the dog. Yeah, yeah. I thought that was an elbow.
Foster's dogs. He's a good guy.
So looks like no, I'm not knocking him. No,
well, no, you're not. I know. God bless him. I just like the guy a lot.
Here's your your dog a moment for you, Stacey.
Wow, puppies.
Wow. Okay, that's a guy to love. Yes, puppies.
Oh, more puppies.
Puppy content's always good on Twitch.
Oh, that's the best.
Yeah.
Look at that. Love
happy it. Dogs. Look at that tail.
You guys are so easy.
Have you guys seen that? Okay, this is not at all Google related, and we probably should get back on task. Never mind. I'm not going to digress.
Are you complaining about Steakums?
Let's talk.
Oh, there's your dog.
Where's your dog?
You're like Lamar Alexander, Stacey. Did you see that?
He likes Steakums?
In the hearing, he was off to the side of the screen, just like Stacey, so that you could see his dog behind and think more highly of him. That's pretty disgusting. I think it was exploiting the poor pooch.
My dog is exhausted. I'm exploiting her so much. She's just back there sleeping.
Siva Vaidyanathan. Article in Wired talking about the Facebook regulatory, or I guess not really regulatory, and that's part of his problem.
Self-regulatory.
Even that. Their review board, Facebook and the folly of self-regulation, the company's new review board is designed to move slowly and keep things intact, to play on the Facebook slogan of move quickly and break things. Well, I'm sure you've read this.
Yes,
and
I love Steve.
We do now know who's on the board. And it's a very prestigious board of people.
Indeed.
Right? I think his contention is that they have no power.
He makes some good points, but we don't know until they start going. I think what we're going to see from that kind of board is they might surprise us and come out with pronouncements. They'll ignore the rules from Facebook.
He says, this review board will provide a creaking, idealistic, simplistic solution to a trivial problem. The stuff that Facebook deletes creates an inconvenience to some people. Facebook makes a lot of mistakes, and dealing with the Facebook bureaucracy is next to impossible. But Facebook is not the whole internet, let alone the whole information ecosystem, and Facebook is not the only way people can communicate and learn things.
True that. Yet.
Although, and you would agree with that, right? I mean, we're putting a lot of responsibility on Facebook. They're just part of the problem. Although, having come back to Facebook, I can see how easy it is to get channeled into a stream of stuff you believe. Very easy to do. He also says the problem with the review board is they Facebook hasn't given them the power they would need to really change.
Well, but again, Facebook. That's where I think we got to see what they do, because what they're going to do is they're going to take. They've said this, in the press conference that I listened in on. They're going to choose cases that speak more loudly.
Right.
I mean, I don't imagine the former prime minister of Denmark and the former editor of The Guardian sitting down. Well, should she have said that makeup was bad or not?
That's not what they're going to be picking.
That's not what they're doing.
Right.
They're going to do things that speak to principles.
Right. Well, one hopes. And maybe Facebook will just ignore them, but at least it will raise an important issue.
But then it's transparent.
Right.
Then we can all judge them, and they will judge. I don't think we can know either way. I think Siva's good points were about diversity, which they know. But, you have one person from India to understand all the culture of India is hard.
Yeah. The last line is the problem with Facebook is Facebook. He doesn't like Facebook.
Well, this is Siva's argument. This is where he and I fundamentally disagree. He thinks that connecting mankind is bound to be a disaster, and I think the opposite.
I don't know if he would say it that way, would he?
He kind of does. He kind of just says it's just a bad idea.
It poses some intransigent problems.
The funny thing about Siva is he's probably the best person I know at Facebook.
Isn't that funny?
His Facebook feed is brilliant.
Yeah.
His Twitter feed is brilliant.
Yeah.
He's really good at social media, even as he decries its mere existence.
Well, maybe he's maybe more aware of it because he's doing all he can to make it a good stream of stuff, and it ends up being crap anyway.
No, he's just too smart. He can't help himself from being smart. That's
right.
Siva.
Right. Well, we'll watch. I mean,
yeah, we will.
The board is complete now. When did the first?
No, it's not. No, it's not complete. It's 20 people, and then those 20 people will choose the next 20 to make up 40.
Got it.
And they will operate in five-person panels. Yes, right. And the board itself has views of the diversity, and so they're gonna battle that out and figure out who needs to be there, who's missing. But they're gonna go through some training and bonding, and they have to, as I mentioned in the last show, they have to get equipment to get access to Facebook's own moderation systems. So it'll be a while, a few months.
Yeah, because, you can't do ropes courses right now with COVID.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
No corporate bonding right now.
Mm-mm.
Right?
And that's
oh, God, I hate that stuff. Oh,
I
geez.
Do too.
And you know what?
In high school, I was going to tell you about my secret ropes course history.
Yeah, please.
Oh, no, do it.
I worked with kids who were in danger of failing, and we did ropes courses with them. I was one of the trainees.
I would have obeyed you. Yeah, you would have told me what to do. I would have said, yes, ma'am.
No, I think that's good. I think that actually works really well with high school kids. A little less that with business executives, but definitely works well with high school kids.
You know what I hate? Icebreakers.
A lot of things.
Icebreakers.
I hate icebreakers. I despise icebreakers. I want to run away until the friggin' icebreaker is over.
This is pretty much why
I'm leaving my ice frozen for you. I freeze harder if you
Jeff,
try to
tell
do
us what you mean by icebreakers.
Why don't we all say
a little
what was
bit
our
about
favorite game as a child? Tells me nothing about you. I didn't have favorite games as a child. I feel inadequate from the start of whatever meeting you're having, and I really start to dislike everyone in the meeting.
Oh God, I love it. It's like going to a
don't break my ice
with Dorothy Parker or something. That's awesome.
Okay, we should go back to Google, you guys, because we have of actual Google stuff.
Lots of news. Lots of news.
What would you like to talk about? Yes, go ahead. You start. Sidewalk is done. Folded.
As of Thursday.
Exits Toronto.
Now, they exited Toronto. Did they fold Sidewalk?
No.
Okay.
They
I was about
gave
to say.
Up
some
on
smarter
Sidewalk
city
Toronto.
May get them yet.
Yeah. So this was this very, when you look at the picture of it, it's a relatively small development on the Quayside in Toronto, which is right now just a warehouse district. It encompasses a few apartment buildings and stuff, but it's all censored, lots of cameras and stuff. And the idea is a model city, and in this case, really just a model neighborhood based on big data. The city of Toronto wanted to do it. Google Sidewalk, which is an Alphabet company, has the technology to do it. The people of Toronto, at least some of the people of Toronto.
Well, the media of Toronto.
Hated it.
And moral panic.
Okay, no, stop. Google, in its typical googly fashion, went out and said, we have this great big plan. We're going to change the world. Trust us. And people said, I am a citizen and I have input here. So I'm going to use that input and ask you a lot of questions. And Google said, we're going to do something amazing. Trust us. They actually put out a multi-thousand page answer to these questions that didn't answer any of them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that Google shot itself in the foot.
Right. Well, we're both right. I think Toronto shot itself in the foot because they got all nasty about it. And oh, my God, the big horrible company is going to do horrible things.
I don't think so.
And I think they were both wrong. I think they were both way wrong. And they've lost an opportunity. They both lost an opportunity. But you know what? This is like the Amazon extra headquarters. Come to Newark, Google. It's right next door to New York. Yeah. They need you.
Yeah.
You could do amazing things.
This is
the
parcel, by the way, that they were going to develop, which is really just wasted space and
but
could have been
also
really beautiful. And look, you have other developers vying. Toronto skyline is laced with horrific condominium complexes.
Oh, God, yes.
That were overbuilt in the last 20 years. This would have been a timber-based skyscraper. It was a very interesting project.
But it also included another parcel, I think a 50-acre parcel, that the city was giving up just to Google. So there was a lot about this that was not fully explained well. And I will say, here's what I'm going to say about both of these things, and Jeff, even your comments about moral panic. I think moral panic is something, if you want to believe in it, if you want to call it moral panic, we have to address this. And tech companies have to be a little less arrogant, and they have to willing to do the work.
Right.
Every other company, like if you talk to a construction firm,
it's hard.
Or a developer,
it's hard. You got to get by a lot of roadblocks.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, Stacey. I absolutely agree with you. But let's also see the process of development locally is often corrupt, and it's 100%. And it's a game, and it's played by people like Jared Kushner, and we see the fruits of it. So I think that if Google wanted to accomplish something, I repeat, I love Toronto dearly. It's about the other place I'd want to live. New York, Berlin, Toronto, my favorite cities. I think it's a great place. But Google should have picked some place that really could have used them. And they could have collaborated with the city better and done something in a place like Newark or Camden or Trenton.
God, Camden.
That could have made a huge difference.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, what's weird to me is Google did such a good job with Google Fiber, if you remember, with working with the communities until they started actually digging up people's lawns, which everyone's going to get pissed about. So it was kind of surprising that I just don't think, and this gets to, I wrote about this, I think this gets to one of the core problems with smart city efforts is we don't actually know what we're buying and selling here. And I think when you do civic infrastructure, you have to be very clear on what you're offering people and the value of that, because my God, we're democracies, right? And
yes,
you have to sell people on the idea.
I agree. But here's the interesting thing, Stacey. Post-COVID, we don't know what cities are going to be, right? I'm very worried for New York. I'm very worried for every city, especially cities with public transit and the things that we need in a society. And so what does a smart city look like then with the kind of data we could have, things that can protect people's lives around data, privacy klaxons going off, certainly.
Well, no, one of the things that Google was so problematic with is they didn't talk about how the city could access and use the data. That was one of the big complaints, is Google was going to have all this data, but they didn't want to make all of it available to cities, and they were
But they were also scared of saying, "Uh-oh, Google's handing over data to the city." So it was a delicate dance. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you that they didn't do enough to say, "Here's what could benefit you, Toronto," but they get smashed on the other side of their head. Oh my God, they got data! So the more they talked about data, the worse off. So they get allergic to that. But I'm agreeing with you, Stacey. I'm agreeing with you. They could have done a much better job. Toronto could have done a better job, too.
I don't get why Google is so terrible about communicating. I mean, they're terrible about communicating on every level. It's
probably an arrogance. It is difficult to do this kind of development every time this happens in any city. And I've seen it here at Petaluma on a much smaller scale. The developer is, there's a constant push and pull from the developer and various civic entities, not just the city government, but locals and so forth. We're so far from it. I don't know what the real issues were. Maybe Google was asking too much money from Toronto. Maybe the issue was Toronto wanted data. Google didn't
want to give it to them. No, the issue was that Google, when they proposed this, they had the Quayside project, but then they also had a whole plan for another development that wasn't part of that project.
Right.
That the city was also giving to them. And then there were also issues about data usage.
All of that's negotiable at some point, right? I mean,
Google wasn't willing to negotiate on it, and they weren't talking about what they were going to do with it.
So is this kind of like Amazon walking away from New York saying, well, fine, okay, you don't want it, too bad.
I think it's Google.
Yeah, it's a little bit of take my ball and go home, yeah.
But I also think they – maybe a little bit. I do think that they realize that this is a stupid thing to pursue in the wake of like sheer economic catastrophe.
That may also
where we're heading.
And city catastrophe too.
And city catastrophe.
I mean, how do you get from that complex? How do you get to your job? Subway. Right. And you have to go a distance to get to the subway.
It's just, I'm looking at this parcel and it just, it's not a particularly attractive part of Toronto. It's a part that that really could use some redevelopment. Yep. It seems as if it would have been nice if they could have figured out a way to do it. And I love, you know, I think we're, it's going to take some of these, some of these tech companies to step up and say, let's try some different ways to do our cities. Let's plan some different ways. This is the full 800 hectare designated waterfront area. The Quayside part was just that red part, but the purple is, of course, the whole eastern waterfront. And I don't know how much of that they were proposing.
So now we have, as we talked about last week, Eric Schmidt brought in by Cuomo to rethink technology and local government.
Right.
It is an opportunity and a need.
Now's the time. I mean,
Stacey's primary point is right. The arrogance is a problem. But we should be figuring this stuff out together now.
I don't know if we will. but we'll see. It's not just arrogance. It's also a willingness to tell people what the concrete value is. And I'm going to say tech is really bad at this because actually tech broadly is bad at this. Companies like Apple are very good. And I'm not a huge Apple fan by any stretch, but they do a good job of explaining how like a brand new chip or a brand new technology is going to just change your world in an amazing way. And I think tech companies tend to either overpromise on that and not deliver, or they just say, woo, magical chip or magical radio protocol. And they're like, you should get excited because they're excited. And they'll be like, it can do all these things, but they don't deliver it to people in a package that most people can consume it. And I think, and you've really got to do that if you're going to sell, and not just smart cities. I think it's, if you're thinking about reimagining cities and you're bringing technology into play, there are a lot of really amazing technologies out there, but it's really hard to say, none of those are actually deliverable yet in a package. They're actually something you need systems integrators. You need a lot of help to pull together. And I think that's going to be really tough to communicate and build because it's such a fragmented.
It's also process. Human. It's human-centered design thinking is we'll try it once, then we'll see, and then we'll iterate, and then we'll try, and then we'll iterate, which is the way the world does operate. But they
kind
don't
tough
promise
in
that
city.
Sense.
Yeah. I would love to hear from somebody on the other side who can explain, you know, what was wrong with this.
Bianca Wiley.
Okay. I'm reading the master plan. It sounds, you know, like at least they were trying to listen. They did a lot.
I would have liked to live there.
That's probably where it comes down to for me is that's cool. I want to be there. Yeah.
Beats living in Disney.
I don't want to live in Celebration, Florida.
Right, exactly.
But this looked pretty kind of cool and interesting. And as I said, it's an improvement over the way it is right now. And I know that area. I've spent some time there.
So
But I would be very curious to know what it may. It may purely have been COVID. That's what they said it was. It's just the economic climate's not right to build all of this right now, especially if there's pushback from the city. But it seems like they were making some progress. I know
Google,
it's easy to say, oh, it's privacy advocates tanked this. And I don't know if that's the case. I really don't.
It was not in the end, it was not a happy marriage.
Yeah. There's a lot of back and forth. But I can tell you every single development, we got a development going on in Petaluma right now. People don't want it. It's going to add another stop to the train, the smart train, which people also don't want, but it takes a lot of cars off the road. This is normal. This is the back and forth that goes on.
The back and forth of local
government.
As it should.
So I certainly don't know what happened. And I don't, you know, maybe you want to do a whole piece on it, think piece on it, Stacey, for Giga.
For my newsletter?
Yeah.
I no longer work at Giggle. I haven't
this
for 5 years.
This is why we need journalism.
Yes. No, I've done, I wrote actually extensively about it during the fighting.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so I had people on the show to talk about it.
Oh, good. So you do know a lot about it. Is it at all a loss to Toronto that it's not going to happen now?
I mean, yes. I think it's a loss because I do think there were good things about it. I think it could have been a really interesting project. Like, it would have been good to build something like this. I think that Google probably could have done a better job explaining some of that and acknowledging what it was going to do with the data and answering some of these questions, I guess.
Right.
But you know what, too? I think that if they'd tried this 5 years ago, it would have gone through a lot smoother.
Yes, but I think that's because we've started learning about how...
I'm also going to say it's also because in the meantime, we've had moral panic.
No, I think there's a very legitimate case for saying, hey, we're letting these companies have a lot of data and they're using it in they're sometimes using it in ways that are not comfortable for us. And we're also seeing how when you start building AI based on this sort of data, there's no accountability for things like redlining or other things that, and this is a really important point. Cities and governments, their job is to protect those who are most injured by our society, right? They're the safety net. They're the last stop, right? And if you look at it that way, they have a very different goal than a private company does. And sometimes those things are in conflict, and I don't think there's ways to resolve some of them.
What I'm saying, Stacey, too, is that the atmosphere now about tech, we're in the tech lash. It's very negative. I think that has to factor in. So it's politically, especially in a place like Canada, which, granted, remember, I love, but they tend to be, you know, European. They're more European than American by a long shot. Robertson Davies always said that Canada is actually Scandinavia. And
oh, good, because I love Scandinavia.
I love Canada and I love Scandinavia. but they have a different cultural view, and there's more skepticism. Maybe it's another story in the rundown, and this is probably another example of not doing it right. I've argued that part of what the platforms have to do too is start to defend the internet and defend the freedoms that are there. And I'm scared of what's going to happen. Right. So what does Facebook do? Facebook is starting a one report said dark money. I think it's a little strong, but an effort to kind of boost tech. I'm not sure that's the way to do
it. This is that new. Is it a political action committee or just a lobbying group? The Edge.
It's. I can't tell if it's purely lobbying. I think it's obviously part of it.
It's called American Edge, and the idea dark money merely means you don't. You don't know who's donating to it, right? It's a nonprofit,
but we know it's Facebook.
It's Facebook. They can raise money, blitz the airwaves with ads without the obligation of disclosing all their donors. They call it a kind of like a social welfare group, American Edge. Facebook says the U.S. leads the world in technology. We should be proud of that fact and promote it. We're working with a diverse group of stakeholders to help build support for our industry while we're leading an effort to start this coalition. Now's a good time because I think people are a little bit more positive about technology.
Yeah, I think it is. But it also, just to Stacey's point, I mean, I think what you're saying is behave better and maybe it'll get better. And I think the example of that is Amazon, right? Amazon should have an aggressive structure to treat its employees better in the warehouses.
They're going to pay $2 an hour more.
Yeah, I know.
But only till the end of the month.
I like Amazon and I use Amazon, but they could be doing better.
Yeah. By the way, deliveries, according to Amazon, will be returning to normal.
Yay.
Hmm.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I'm a little miffed because I bought my mom a Kindle Paperwhite and it only was delivered today.
Yeah, it takes a while. Well, she got it today, though.
How long did you order it?
I ordered it on Saturday, and I paid more money. They put it on sale on Monday.
I ordered a damn miracle that lets you read on a device that gets across the country and out of nowhere.
Come on.
And it took 3 days. How dare they?
I ordered it Saturday the 2nd for delivery on Mother's Day the 10th.
Oh, well, that makes sense. You want it on Mother's Day. I understand.
All right. All right. You win. All right.
It's my mom.
Yeah. Well, she got it a couple of days after Mother's Day. I'm sure she was very happy, right? That's actually a really nice Kindle. I love those.
Yeah. Well, she was on the second generation Kindle with like the keys and everything. Yeah, and I was, and she was telling me, she's like, it's not broken. It's just, you know, I have to charge the battery after like an hour. And I was like, oh my God.
Those are moms. Uh-huh.
It works fine, honey. Amazon took
I don't want to learn anything new.
My mom's like,
oh no,
too.
She learns new things all the time. She actually is an active.
So is my mom.
The show.
Yeah.
She's, but she refused to give up her iPhone 6.
Yeah, my mom, she was raised by Depression-era parents. That was her thing.
I think that's part
of
it.
Yep.
And you know what our kids are going to say? I was raised by COVID-era parents. That's why I wash my hands 10 times a day and can still wear a mask. Amazon said they hired 175,000 people. Took several weeks.
Wow.
It's kind of amazing.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. The scale that Amazon operates at. So they say, according to Time Magazine, it's back to normal or will be back to more normal. We were overwhelmed in April. Many shoppers saw long delivery times and shifted their purchases to pick up curbside options offered by Walmart and Target. This is according to the chief executive of Price Spider. I tried, but Walmart and Target seem to have the same long, lengthy waits. Still can't get disinfecting wipes anywhere.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, well, I mean, Amazon's not magic. I don't know if they're going to be able to get you disinfecting wipes.
No. I'm running low. Amazon did announce a new $90 Amazon Fire tablet, the Fire HD 8. $89.99. Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah. 32 gigs of storage. The Fire 8 Plus has more RAM, 6-month subscription to Kindle Unlimited. That's $109.99. They start shipping June 3rd, which means you should be able to get them in time for Mother's Day next year.
Or Father's Day.
Actually, that's
right. That's right.
I think, though, an Oasis is better for reading than a Kindle because it's paper.
Oh, the Father's Day is the 21st. Y'all have time.
You got time.
Order now.
Amazon, one of the big winners in streaming, by the way. The number one is Netflix, clearly. Then Amazon, an average household minutes for the month. This is according to Seven Park, which tracks this stuff. Beating Disney and other big media companies. Is it the fact, you know, is it the shows? I don't know.
I think it's everybody who has Prime automatically gets it. And if you haven't looked at it when you're in quarantine, you're like, I'll look at it.
I'll watch.
I didn't know I had that. Oh, cool.
Yeah. And we've been watching, we started the Lindbergh show based on the Philip Roth novel. That's.
Is it scary?
It's not scary. It's just it's an alternate history in which Lindbergh beat Roosevelt to become president in 1940.
It could happen here.
Yeah, it's a little maybe too close to home. And then, America First, right? That was Lindbergh's slogan. That's pretty good. Bosch is pretty good. I don't know.
There's Upload. I just started that.
Isn't
That's
Upload
fun.
Interesting? Yeah.
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 Did we discuss on Netflix, did you do Babylon Berlin?
Oh, I love Babylon Berlin.
I started it.
Trying to watch the new season. It's hard. I don't know why, but I'm just... I need lighter fare for now.
Yeah, what we do in the shadows.
Very
oh my
good.
Gosh.
Very good. Yeah, it's
behind you know what heaves me off?
What?
Well, so the good news was tearing a lollipop out of my mouth. The good news was I never saw Hamilton. I didn't go to see Hamilton.
I'm so excited about this.
So wait. I'm going to be mad first. Then you happy? Then be mad. Yeah. Good news is they moved up the movie version of the stage play.
July 3rd.
A year and a half.
Bad
news
is Disney Plus.
It's Disney Plus.
You can spend $10 and get Disney Plus that month.
Oh my gosh. Don't even complain. You also get
Now you subscribe and then you got to remember to cancel. I don't want Disney Plus.
Well, I'm sure they'll make a UHD DVD or something of it as well.
Jeff, then you can just wait. Don't complain that Disney put their money show.
I'm with Stacey on this one because it was not going to be till October 2021.
I know. I was, but the problem was it was whiplash. I got all happy and then I got all pissed.
Get the free trial. I'm a Verizon subscriber. I get it free for a year. I'm thrilled. Yeah. I haven't watched anything on Disney Plus, but I will be watching that.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
That's exciting.
Jeff, that is such an inconsequential thing to be mad about.
Don't tell me what to be mad about. I'm going to be mad about that.
I'm like, oh, that's Jeff. That's like they're giving us free cake, and you're like,
but it's
yeah, Marie Antoinette. How well did that work out? Speaking of revolutions,
I'm going to have to fight someone in the chat who said Thor Ragnarok was not the best of the Thor franchise, but I'm not going to fight them now.
Isn't that the one directed by what's his name?
Taika.
I love him.
Taika. He's so funny. He also does What We Do in the Shadows. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Oh, he does? I didn't know that. I love Jojo Rabbit. I thought that was incredible.
Oh,
I did not see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, it's an amazing movie, Stacey. Just amazing.
I can understand people would be reluctant to watch it because it's about a young boy growing up in Hitler's Germany whose imaginary friend is Adolf. So, and he's Jewish. No, he has Jewish friends. It's a little, the premise is it's really cute.
Weird, but it's so well done.
It's really
so
cute.
Well, cute may not be the exact right word, but yes.
What We Do in the Shadows season 2 is out, and people seem to really be loving it. I watched a little bit of season 1. I went, okay, I get it. I wasn't that excited about it, but you say season 2 is really good. Huh?
Well, okay, so I thought season 1 was funny, but it is a certain type of humor. So you do have to put, like, episode 4 of season 2 has this whole thing where he checks his email, and it's been, like, a certain number of years, like a lot, and he gets a chain letter curse thing, and they all think they're cursed, and it is so funny. I just
Taika Waititi.
It's just fantastic.
Can you pick up in season 2, or do you have to watch season 1?
Oh no! But season 1 was really hilarious. It's very low stakes, my friend.
I do, and it's not on Disney Plus. I do need some funnier, lighter fare because the plot against America is, you know, like,
Yeah, that's not.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah,
Uber was trying to buy Grubhub. Grubhub's stock through the roof. They actually had to halt trading yesterday. This has been going on for a year. They can't agree on a price. Grubhub wants to be sold, but they want to be sold for more than Uber is willing to pay. Shares of Grubhub were up 38% yesterday before trading was halted at 1 o'clock.
Feels like an antitrust thing waiting to happen.
Because Uber owns Uber Eats.
Right.
Which is the same business as Grubhub. But there are others. There are many others, aren't there? In most markets, don't you have DoorDash.
And Postmates.
A brand that never made sense to me.
Postmates?
Yeah, what does that name mean?
What does that do with food?
Like, sounds like it's something you get in the mail.
I think Postmates is actually, it's not just food. Isn't it like
cigarettes?
Anything?
Yeah, you get cigarettes.
What is it? But even that.
You get ice cream.
I mean, maybe not anything, but it's like Cosmo.
Cosmo. You know what? I was just going to say, what was the name of that bicycle service in New York City where they brought you cigarettes and ice cream? Cosmo.
So I was a partner in a startup years ago called Daylife, which was basically Google News as an API. But the brand sounded like a day spa.
Daylife. Welcome to Daylife, where the music is low, the lights are calm, and our lovely ladies will bring you... No, never mind.
No, that's the wrong
also,
kind of
I also
spa.
Said today that Jeff's Zoom room... Sounds like a bad strip club from the 70s.
There's no champagne.
No, it sounds like a kid's playground.
Jeff's Zoom room. So what about Apple News? Is it apparently, and some publishers are confused about this, they're trying to get the rights to do audio versions of all the stuff on Apple News Plus. What do you think about that, Jeff? Why would a publisher not like that?
Well, they don't like Apple News a lot in the deal that it has, but they love the huge traffic it sends.
Right.
And if they make a little more money and they get more audience, not a bad thing. It's an interesting thing that, is, you know, does this mean that audio They're betting on the future of audio.
I think everybody is, right? I know I did.
I think everyone is.
Yeah.
And
look at Spotify. They spent $500 million
on podcasting.
Yeah, podcasts.
And, you know, just these platforms are everywhere. When you think about wireless headphones, and I said this with Apple's when they came out a long time ago, having something like this always in your ear makes content accessible in a way. It's kind of like the Quibi of news, right? Except
it works.
Except it works, and you might want to listen to it. I will say, just speaking of audio, because you guys are audiobook fans, did you see the story in the New York Times about the like number one audiobook narrator? And Jeff, I thought it was cool for you because it talked about, and I'm going to try to find the name. The story actually had him reading parts of the like.
You mean Eduardo Ballerini?
Thank you. Eduardo Ballerini.
The voice of God and Knausgård, Wittmann, and Machiavelli.
So scroll down a little bit. Because this was, I just thought, super fun. There you go.
Should I play it?
And hit play.
Oh.
Yeah.
You need my audio?
From the front of the bar.
Let me play it again, because they didn't have my audio up.
Suddenly, I heard a loud crash from the front of the bar. Appears we've stumbled into some kind of class joint here.
I don't think I've ever heard any of his books.
Oh.
So, I just thought it was both an interesting thing, just talking about, like, this class of celebrity.
You listen to audiobooks?
No, because I read so quickly.
Oh, I love audiobooks, and there are definitely narrators that you go, oh, you actually choose a book because of the narrator.
And I reject them. I go berserko. Yes. You're gonna be mad at me for being mad again, Stacey. But you know, if you have like a World War II book and they don't know how to pronounce German,
oh, that's bad.
I just can't take it.
No.
I just can't. I love you got me into Audible, Leo.
Oh, good.
I mean, I knew it was there, but you really got me excited about it. And the other thing I love about Audible is the fact you can return a book with no problem.
Yeah, they're very good about that. You can even
I'll give it 15 minutes if I'm not going to like it.
Yeah,
it's no risk.
Right. And actually, when Daniel Suarez came in, he's been in several times. We're big fans of his books, and he I think one of the early interviews he brought the guy who reads his books, Jeff Gerner, with him. And
well,
it was
great.
So awesome because it was really a dual interview. I'm interviewing Daniel, who I love. He's become a good friend. And then we turn to Jeff and he reads. And you hear it. When you hear it, it's like, yes, that's it. That's the voice. It really.
In this article, they had some author do a book talk. But then
gross.
He had this guy there to read it.
To read it because that's the voice. You don't.
And it is such hard work.
Yeah, I've done it.
It is
very difficult.
Incredibly hard work.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Especially
when you talk like I do, and half of it's mush mouth.
I speed up.
I do not know that I would have you read my books, Jeff. Unless they were angry books. If they were angry books.
Would you like me to read your book? Actually, your book, they'd have a female narrator. They're pretty good about getting the narrator to match the sex, the gender of the author. Or the voice
Which
in the
is
novel.
Weird, but I was about to say, what if I wrote a book and the point of view was a man's?
Then it would be a man. Then it would be a man. So they always want the reader to be, if it's a first person book, always it'll match the gender. So
well, that's distressing. That limits my choice of audiobooks if I wanted to read audiobooks to people. Mm.
Yes. You could.
You'd be good at this,
you have such a good voice.
You have a good voice. Yes.
I really wanted to do that sort of thing for a while, but
you still could.
Now,
even from the comfort
I did
of your
read
home.
For the blind. There was a charity for reading for the blind for a long time.
Yeah.
I used to be on the board of that.
Oh, my great aunt was too. So.
Oh. Ooh.
I'm going to have to listen to some of Ballerini's readings.
What are some of the other books he's done?
He did
Bible.
The six-volume Carl Ove Nausgaard's My Struggle.
Oh,
that's a struggle.
Yeah, I missed that one. 135-hour monologue took him more than 200 hours over the course of 5 years to record.
Oh,
you'd have to really like a book.
Snog. Wow.
I'm listening to A War and Peace that is not great, but it's interesting. In fact, let me play it. I think I can play it if I log into my Audible account. That's one of the nice things Audible does now is you can play back from the webpage as well. But it's an old, it's it. This is the old style of audiobooks. Some more, Ballerini is more of the new style, which I think is good. He's more bringing it to life. This guy, let me see if I can find it. This guy is like a 1940s actor. His name is Frederick Davison. Here, I'll play a little bit of it. You can hear it.
This is, on the contrary, brimming over with excitement and impulsiveness. To be enthusiastic had become her pose in society. Oh, at a time, oh, even God. When she had indeed no inclination.
I don't know if I can do 61 hours of this.
I have constipation. Yeah, I know. It's... That's but audio constipation.
But he does the female voices really well, which is hard for a male narrator to do.
She was enthusiastic so as not to disappoint the expectations of those who knew her. The affected smile which played continually about
Anne. Speaking of affected.
It might be. Well, yeah, I feel like he should be reading Pride and Prejudice more than War.
Did we play some time ago the Stephen Fry about Harry Potter?
He did. It's the Harry Potter books in the right. UK. We got Jim Dale in the US.
Exactly.
Jim
I
Dale
put
does,
in the chat.
Does more of the characters, which I think is wonderful. But gosh, I think Stephen Fry is magnificent.
I just put it in the chat. It's hilarious. If you want to take 2 minutes, it's hilarious.
Let me see if I can.
But it's on Facebook.
Oh,
it's
on Facebook, Jeff. No, that's fine. Let me click it. I think I can now actually visit Facebook legitimately, having an account and all. Stephen Fry on a Harry Potter pronunciation pickle.
90s. My agent called me up and said, there's a children's story. Would you do an audiobook of it? It was called Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, unless you're American, where the word philosopher would terrify you, and it's called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone in America. But so I went along to the... I read it, I thought it was rather good. It was about this boy who... Oh, it turns out he's some sort of wizard, and he goes to school, and he's taught all these spells. And I thought, this is good. So I went along, and I met the author, who's introduced to me as Joanne Rowling, and I met her, and she was really nice, and we shook hands, and I started reading it, and it was good fun. And then on the second and a half day, or whenever I'd finished, I said to her, "Do you know what? I think this is pretty good. I think it's going to do well." She said, "Well, actually, I've already finished a second one," and I said, "Good for you." The way she tells it, I'm a lot more patronizing than I like to remember. But by the third one, this had become something of a phenomenon, as you can imagine. And by the fourth, it was insane. The second one was The Chamber of Secrets, the third one was The Prisoner of Azkaban. But I remember in that book, and this is the thing about reading, when you read a book for recording, I can usually go fairly well without making too many mistakes. I mean, some actors are slower and some, you know, quicker, but I try not to. Yeah, thank you. I'm not saying this to show off, because actually this, I come out of this very badly. But there was one phrase, and this is what happens, that tripped me up. It was just three words. It's ridiculous. Three words. And I couldn't say it. And the three words were, Harry pocketed it. See, I still can't say it. Harry pocketed it. Harry, you see, I can say Harry, and I can say pocketed, and I can say it, but I can't say Harry pocketed it. I always, and so we were doing it. I was going, Harry pocketed it, and Joe Rowling wasn't in the studio, because this was the third book, I think, the Azkaban book, and there were the Dementors and everything. Everyone started laughing, and the engineer in the studio. I said, can we come back to Harry pocketed it at the end of the day, maybe? We'll just try it. So at lunchtime, I call up Joe Rowling, and I say, Joe, now she had very, I think wisely, from the beginning, when it was just one book, she had wanted the audiobook to be complete, unabridged, not condensed in any way, as sometimes audiobooks are, because she felt that if children were reading it and listening at the same time, they would be annoyed if it was different, and so she wanted. So it was very important that we got it exactly right. So I called her up and said, look, do you mind? I can't say Harry pocketed it. Would it be okay if I said Harry put it in his pocket? And there was a big pause at the end of the line. And then she said, no. And in her best witchy's voice. And I could just hear the smile in her voice when she said it. So I managed to get it out. But This is a mark of the woman. The phrase Harry pocketed it appears in every subsequent book.
She kept writing it in because she knew Stephen will have to read each and every
I love that one.
I was very fortunate because in the early days, in the second book, she was still touring. And she did a book reading in Sonoma County up here in Santa Rosa. And I took my daughter, who was only about 7 or 8 at the time. I said, remember this because she's going to be very famous and you're going to have seen her. We got her autograph. And she said, the one question she gets all the time is, how do you pronounce Hermione one?
Wait, what?
It's Hermione. Hermione. Americans apparently don't know how to pronounce Hermione.
That is not an American name.
Not an American
name. For sure.
No,
to this day, when I see the word epitome, I think epitome.
Epitome.
Me too.
There is somebody on Twitter. He's a grammarian who goes around correcting stuff. He tweeted at me.
He must be popular.
Yeah, right. There's a way to make friends.
Is this Dreyer?
No. I wish it were Dreyer. If it were Dreyer, I would have asked for an autograph. He said, Leo, it's epithet, not epithet. Fine. Epithet. All right. I do say epithet for some reason. I don't know why.
Boba Fett?
Like Boba Fett.
Pavlovna's face, out of keeping as it was with her faded looks, expressed a spoilt child's continual consciousness of a charm.
Of that. I don't know.
Oh, Lord. I couldn't do it. No.
No.
That one's going to be returned.
Let's see. What else? Let's take a little break. We come back. We could do the changelog. How about that? All right, everybody.
Yeah, you didn't feel like it last week. You weren't up to it. You just didn't have the mojo. This week, you got it back.
This changelog sucks, too. But it's okay.
Sell it, Leo. Sell it.
You might as well just stop listening now because it's going to be terrible. No, we're going to do the changelog in just a second. But they're trying to help me be the best I can be. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Worldwide Technology. You know I'm a huge fan of Worldwide Technology. We actually was the last. It'll always have a soft spot in my heart because it was the last trip we took before all this happened. Early March, Lisa and I went out to St. Louis to visit their Advanced Technology Center. Wow. It was so impressive. Worldwide Technology is a vendor of enterprise technology, a consultant. They help people. They do software. It's one of the top technology solution providers in the world. They deliver business and technology outcomes to big companies, private enterprises, public organizations all over the globe. Their business really is digital transformation, and we're in the midst of that for business worldwide right now. It is phenomenal what's going on as people move to the cloud. One of the ways they support organizations with this transformation is helping them adopt a multi-cloud architecture. That can be challenging, but there are disadvantages as well as advantages, but they know them all. They've been there, they've done that, and they can help you make that transition. And they stay with you every step of the way. From the vision and strategy to enablement, migration to cloud optimization and management and everything in between. They have great cloud consultants. They'll sit down with you. And this is one of the things that is the hallmark of Worldwide Technology. They will, before they do anything, they will really get to know what your vision is, what your long-term strategy is, because they know that those investments in enterprise technology, especially cloud, only pay off when they're aligned to your business goals. So that's the very first thing they're going to do. And then through briefing and workshops, that's the other thing. They give back. They pass out knowledge all the time. WWT has all of these ways that organizations can unravel the complexities of the cloud, unlock business opportunities. We did an event with them in St. Louis in March. I hope to do many more over the next few years. They are experts in cloud migrations and application development. They have an amazing app development team. They can create a secure landing zone in any cloud for your organization, for your business. And that Advanced Technology Center is amazing with on-demand labs that can give you access to tools so you can try stuff, you can pilot stuff, you can see if it works, if it makes sense for you, things like microservices, cloud-native development. Once you're up in the cloud, WWT helps with management and optimization because it's a continuum. You don't just put it up there and set it and forget it. Being in the cloud requires constant attention to detail, but they're there to work with you on that. Whether your strategy calls for cloud native, hybrid cloud, or even on-prem resources, because that's what they've done for years. WWT works closely with Intel to optimize for the latest cloud smart solutions based on Intel technology for security, for performance, and, of course, for agility. And they also feature Intel's Optane persistent memory and other Intel technologies, workload optimized to deliver affordable, large capacity and data persistence for solutions supporting everything from VDI to data analytics. WWT. Don't just talk the talk, walk the walk with worldwide technology. Find out more at WWT.com/Twit. And don't forget, if you create a MyWWT account, you'll be able to access all sorts of resources at their Advanced Technology Center ecosystem, papers, white papers, labs. You can even do your own on-demand labs from anywhere in the world. You don't even have to go to St. Louis. WWT.com/Twit. Their time is now for WWT, worldwide technology, delivering business and technology outcomes throughout the world. We're so happy to be partnered with them. And the minute we can go back to St. Louis, we're going to do it because that was a fantastic trip. Really appreciate their support. All right. Now, Jeff, are you ready? Play.
On-prem?
You've never heard on-prem?
I've never heard of on-prem.
You don't talk the talk, man. On-premises.
No, means your servers live in your data center.
You could have them on-premises, right. Or you could have them up there in the cloud.
I figured it out. I just never heard.
Oh, yeah. I talked that enterprise talk.
You're so cool.
Enterprise shit talk to you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Google changelog.
The Google changelog.
Oh, it's the most exciting Google changelog since last week.
Where he couldn't bear to do it. He was so down.
You know how many people thought I was gone? I mean, there was a whole thread started up in the Twit community. Thank you. We appreciate you, Leo. They thought I was just going to get up, walk out the door, and never come back. You know what? Here was my thinking there. I think we all go, there's ups and downs throughout this, right?
Yes.
We all go through this cycle. Most on-air personalities, it's our job to project a positive, upbeat persona. We don't always feel that way.
No, that's the plastic vision of
this.
But
I'm a good actor. I can do that, but I thought, you know what? If maybe I'm feeling the pain. I thought it would be good for you to see that we all are going through this. That's all. I still feel like crap.
Oh, buck up, fella.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of those, too. Like, somebody in our Twit community said, if you ever do that again, I'm never listening again.
Jeez.
Wow.
Well, that's a way to buck you up.
You know, it's funny. There are people in the world, and I guess I understand this, who think if they email you or tweet or say something like, "I'm that's it. I can never listen to you ever again," like that I'm going to go, oh, no. Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. What can I do? It's like, okay, fine. I don't.
Yeah.
No one's making you, and it's you shouldn't listen if you're not happy. I certainly don't want anybody who doesn't enjoy the shows to listen. That would be a mistake. I don't listen to shows. I don't read books that I don't like. I don't listen to shows I don't like. If I'm watching a TV show and I don't like it, I stop. Don't suffer, please, on my behalf.
But you're going to enjoy this changelog.
This is going to be
particularly good stuff in here.
Juicy.
They're trying to cheer me up.
No, it's true. All right. I'll tell you. Guess which stories I'm excited about. We'll make it into a game.
I'll raise my hand when I think it's a story you're excited in. Google Lens lookups now include inline search results. We already did that one, didn't we? Copy to computer text shortcut.
I don't think so.
I don't care. Here's a big one. Alphabet's balloon-powered Loon Internet comes to Mozambique.
Is your hand raised?
That's not terribly exciting.
Is this one for you?
No, hand's not raised.
Is this one for you? You excited?
Yes, I was excited.
Really?
Loon in the world is very fun. They've got a local carrier.
These are giant balloons. It's flying the stratosphere to give you internet.
Yeah, they're bringing internet to Mozambique, although I don't know if Mozambique Really?
More exciting life than that.
It is fun to see Mozambique.
In the sky.
But I don't even know if I could put my finger on Mozambique on a map, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If Mike Pompeo came to me and said, "You don't even know where Mozambique is on the map," I might have to say, "You're right, sir."
I think it's next. Is it next to Kenya?
It's next to Kenya. Very good. That's exactly right.
I mean, if the map had no countries on it, though, I would have a hard time.
Yeah.
Or like no other names. Go on.
I believe you're right. It's in West Africa-ish. Loon has, by the way, this is not the first place Loon has deployed. They're
Puerto
doing
Rico.
Puerto Rico, that's right, after the hurricane. Kenya, just next door, I hear. I've been told next door to Mozambique is
Kenya.
All
right, now I have to look up where Mozambique is just to make sure.
And Peru, which of course...
Oh, yeah, Mozambique is on the west coast.
Yeah,
it is actually...
West Africa, yeah.
Kenya is not here. It's next to Zimbabwe, Zambia,
you need
and Malawi.
And Malawi.
Malawi, thank
you. Malawi. So Peru, of course, mountainous. So very difficult in the Andes to provide internet service. So I would guess. And Puerto Rico, of course, flattened by hurricane. So and having power issues and infrastructure issues. So these are places where a big balloon providing internet might be really a good idea. I thought Google had kind of given up on Loon. So I'm glad to see.
Okay, I just have to tell people, to the north of Mozambique is Tanzania.
Yeah.
Tanzania, and to the north of... how is it?
Tanzania.
And north of Tanzania is Kenya.
Yeah.
Is Kenya.
North
yeah.
of Kenya is Somalia and Ethiopia.
It's not... It's, all right. It's actually kind of central West Africa, not northwest Africa, up where Kenya and Somalia are.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there was a Facebook executive who was having hellacious... internet connectivity and asking people what to do. And I stopped myself from saying it, but I said, just have Mark put one of those gliders up in the air over you.
Aquila. I think
right.
Facebook did it, give up on Aquila.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so big nice to Google. Maybe they'll put a loon up over Mountain View.
Yeah, that's cool. Google Meet, now free. But we talked about that last week too.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Oh, forever.
Yeah. Well, forever?
All right, moving on. Let's do some things that
this
are
post is from May 12th, so I don't know forever. Google Duo has added group calls.
No, we've
calls.
Talked about it forever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not for forever.
No. Google,
we can
no.
keep the story going long enough to really frustrate Stacey, you know.
And me. Don't forget me. Google Duo adding group calls with up to 32 people. I feel like we did this too.
They shouldn't call it Duo anymore. It's not just two.
What is the word for 32?
I don't know.
You know, Apple had 32 people on FaceTime, but they did this really awful thing where they would float the person talking. You'd see all these bubbles of people, and then they'd float the person talking forward. It was so disturbing. They stopped doing it because no one wanted. No, don't do it. Google will kill. And this we found out, by the way, yesterday, because we had the person in charge of YouTube Music on. Google is going to replace Play Music this year with YouTube Music, and they will offer a migration tool because many of us uploaded music to Google Play Music so that our
library... I tried to migrate, and it said it wasn't my turn.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I just started using YouTube Music because you get it anyway, and I like YouTube Music, actually. It's dark mode. Let's
see. That didn't cause a conniption fit by Jeff. I was surprised.
He wasn't listening. He was looking. Google Podcasts, by the way, can import your Play Music podcast subscriptions as part of this. I like Google Podcasts.
You have to import. You have to do a split import. Put your music onto YouTube and your podcasts onto Google Podcasts.
Google. Just use Spotify like every normal human.
Newman.
Finally, this is actually the one I'm going to raise my hand on. For a long time, I told people, please don't use Google Authenticator. Use Authy for your authentication tool because Google Authenticator had a fatal flaw. If you change phones, you had to set up all of your two-factor all over again. There was no way to export it out of Google Authenticator. Thank goodness. Now there is. You can transfer accounts between devices. So this will eventually come to your phone.
But who's still using this? I mean, the first time that happens to you, you're like...
Never again.
Bleep, bleep. Never again.
Authy is great. It's free. It's from Twilio, which is a great company. Stacey knows all about them. You can ask her if you're not...
It is a great app.
...concerned. And in fact, I talked to the guy. He came to visit our studio a few months ago. Who does Authy? And so I said, thank you, because you offer a really great free authenticator that has this one feature, which is an account, so that you can log into your Authy account anywhere, and there's all of your authentication codes, which is really nice. Google Authenticator is going to do that too. From version 5 to version 5.1, look for it. Soon, Google's Nest cameras will be used to monitor coronavirus patients at Mount Sinai. Two cameras in each room. This way, nurses can stay seated. You would think they'd have cameras in the hospital rooms, in the ICUs.
I can imagine. You would think, but privacy.
One of the cool things is you can use the Nest camera to talk and listen because they have microphones and speakers. So one of the cameras will be used to communicate with the patient. The other one will be pointing at the screen where their vitals are showing, which I think is really great. And it'll be streamed to a console.
Oh, you know, I'm trying to help actually a hospital system in someplace, Illinois, I feel like, figure out how to do this with Amazon Echoes. It's actually quite a challenging problem.
Well,
to do at scale.
Maybe think about doing it with Google, because even though this is the first time Google's done it, they said they plan to provide 10,000 Nest cams that are specifically designed for this kind of monitoring to hospitals around the country. Raise your hand.
That's exciting. Yeah. Raise your hand.
I think easier to do that with a Nest. I have I use the Nest cameras all around our house. As I mentioned before, replaced a Ring with a Hello camera, a doorbell, but I also have Nest cameras, you know, around the outside. I really think they do a good job. I'm very happy with them. The quality of the image is good, and the notifications work well. It's not cheap because you have to buy a Nest subscription, but that's life.
Oh, that's changing too. Is that on your list?
Is it? Tell me.
The Nest subscription changes?
Yeah.
Is that not in here?
No.
Oh.
Should be.
Google is changing their Nest Aware subscription plans. So now, let me look this up. Okay. Keep going and I'll come back to me on this when I have the exact information.
Good.
Because I don't want to mess
it up. It seems fair. It seems only fair that you should help since you're making me do the Google change log.
And
oh,
enjoy
so
it.
Brutal. Okay, now Damn I it. Have it. Here we go. Goodness. So cranky. All right. So what they're doing is they've simplified their pricing.
The new Nest Aware.
Yes, $6 a month or $60 for an annual subscription. That gives you 30 days of event video history.
Oh, fantastic.
But that's
and that's for everything, for all the cameras, speakers, and displays. And I have a lot of them.
Now, if you only have one camera, this is not a bueno deal because
it's a buck more.
You're going to be like, oh, suck. It's going to be more
it's
expensive.
It's incentive to get more. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, one doesn't have a camera. It's the mini hub. But I have 4 with cameras. So that's that's a good deal for me. $6 a month.
That is. Because I think it was it $5 a month for each camera.
A lot of money. Oh, I forgot. I have 2 here. Also on my subscription.
There's one right there. So for SMBs, I actually think they have a 24/7 video history one called Nest Aware Plus that is 60 days of video history and 10 days of 24/7 video. And that's $12 a month. And I would think if you were using it like in a camera purpose for like a business, that might actually be better for you.
We have one in each studio as a kind of a security camera, But we also have real security cameras. These are just mine, so I can see if anybody's at work. Because if somebody's here, I don't want to come in. I only come in when everybody's gone home. You know what? I must have to upgrade it because I was a little annoyed because Amazon said they had delivered something, and they didn't. And I went back. I gave them 5 or 6 days, you know, in case they made a mistake and it never came. And then I went back and said, well, I can probably check the Nest camera from that period of time. And it had already erased it. So I got to get the 30 days should be enough, right? That's plenty.
That is a lot.
That's a lot. Google Play launches Change the Game Design. It's a challenge for students. This is kind of cool. To submit ideas for original mobile games. Starting today, we're accepting applications for our 2020 Change the Game Design Challenge. And this is a good thing for kids who are, you know, at home from school. If you're between the ages of 13 and 18, you can submit an idea for your original mobile game along with a statement on why you're passionate about gaming or what changes you'd like to see in the gaming industry. May 11th through July 31st, they'll hold online workshops starting in June, running through the end of the summer. If you're selected for the workshop, You'll be grouped with a few others for a 4-session crash course on game development hosted by Girls Make Games. So if you, you know, I know there's a lot of 13-year-olds out there who say, oh, I really want to learn how to do game design. I want to get Michael to get involved in this. One of Michael's friends keeps coming to me and say, help me make a game. Help me make a game. This would be perfect. This is Google Play's Change the Game Design Contest, and it's at play.google.com. You could submit your idea there. Looks like they're focused on young women, which is cool. Game changers. I love this. Thank you, Google. What a good idea. Yes, we can. Google's 3D animals.
Well, you're right. This is a pretty dull.
Oh, come on. Stage this log. Is the best part. 30-plus augmented reality critters that can be on your phone. It's a new zoo. You can even have videos of these and other cool 3D objects on you. Wouldn't you like a tiger in your tank or in your swimming pool? Just great.
All right, hold on. There's got to be something better.
Kids can learn at home with Read Along by Google. Kids, would you like to read? Me too.
Okay, dude, are you raising your hand?
No, this is good.
This is exciting.
Yes. I'm going to beat it in a second. I'm going to beat it. Assistant. You keep going, but I'm going to beat this one. You keep going.
So what is this? It's for kids 5 and up.
Or, you know, kids that are trying to learn how to read, basically.
Right. It's first launched in India. They call it Bolo there, and it did so well. They're now introducing it in 180 countries in 9 languages.
So this is cool because what it's doing is it gives you, and this is not unusual. A lot of reading apps, learn to read apps, let kids read along, and it has like little bouncing balls and things like that. What's cool about this is Google's listening to your kid and ties it back and says, oh, this you said this word correctly or you didn't. Oh. So people who go epitome, Google would say, no, it's epitome. And you'd be like, thanks, Goog.
You know what? You know what? That's what made me as neurotic as I am. Mrs. Thompson's class in 3rd grade. We had to sit and we had to read out loud in circles. Uh-oh. And if you made the slightest little error, little Steve, that brat, Mrs. Thompson, I believe Jeffrey made a mistake.
Oh, I hate
made
that kid.
Made me scared to read out loud for years.
You know what would make years. You feel better? Find out what Steve's doing today.
Stephen Gravatt.
Yeah, go find out. What is, you know, he's probably, you know, find out. He's probably that grammar guy who corrected me on Twitter.
But I'm going to beat that, Stacey. I'm going to make you happier.
Wait a minute. I'm not done. Oh, I just want to say, okay. You can do this without signing in, and no data is sent to Google's servers. The voice data is analyzed in real time on the device. So if you're concerned about privacy, so is Google. This is a really good idea. Look for it in the Play Store. It's called Read Along. Of course, you have to have an Android device.
I don't think that's a concern about privacy thing. I think that's a
legal requirement.
DCM.
Yeah.
What is it?
CCDBDBDDB.
I put something to beat this in the chat.
Okay.
I'm not done yet.
Okay. With that story, it's a beat that story.
No, it ties in with this.
To that story.
Okay, yes. So I will do this one.
I'm going to make her more excited.
Kids are reading to therapy dogs on Zoom. They can't pet the pooches, but the sessions book up fast. You want to watch?
Now this beats Stephen Gravatt.
Yeah, but I bet Stephen would say, excuse me, dog, but you shouldn't be yawning when I'm reading to you. I want some video. I guess you can't have video.
Isn't that nice? See? Isn't that nice?
That is nice.
Who's doing this? This is a really good idea.
It is a good idea.
This is part of the PAL program.
They used to do that. I mean, they do this in person beforehand. I know that your dog can go to the library.
My daughter used to read to the cat.
Do dogs like to be read to?
Yeah, they like it when you talk to them.
Okay.
My daughter used to read to the cat, and it was just the sweetest thing. And that's for years she did it. Cat loved it. My daughter loved it.
So go to peopleanimalslove.org, which is PAL. And you can, if you have kids who want to read to the dog, hey, kids. Now you can respond to a PAL dog from home. They do this, as you're absolutely right, they do this in person normally, but now they're doing it on Zoom.
I mean, I can show my dog and have people read to my dog. That's fine.
Yeah. I think that's kind of cute.
No, but you're going to correct them.
Where?
You're going to say, no,
where is she?
It's epitome.
Mommy, is that dog She's dead? Yeah. Mommy, I think the dog died. Mommy? Mommy? Does the
She's
dog?
Just like,
well, the nothing. Nothing at all.
She's just like, nope.
Oh, God, I don't even want to do the rest of these. That's the Google changelog. You can't get better than ending with people reading to dogs. That's perfect.
Yeah, right. See, there I gave you
Thank
your
you,
out.
Jeff. Even though
it has nothing to do with Google. And he's a drummer.
We got it's not Jeffrey's fault. There's something some sluggishness in the TriCaster. They got some goop in the veins, and it's just moving very slower. It's not Jeffrey. Normally, we would do a restart, but we'll do that after the show. This, I think, looks like something that perhaps Jeff Jarvis added to the mix. Excellent Ben Evans piece. Is this your...
Ben's really good. Yeah, it's mine. Yeah, just talking about rolling collapses. So he starts with RIM and says, you know, RIM didn't
you mean
die right away.
The BlackBerry guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not dead yet.
Competition came along, and they didn't die right away. It took time, but they did die.
Okay, sort of.
No, they have an IoT software platform.
Yeah, they own QNX. Yeah.
And it's actually in a lot of things. And they now have an IoT security platform.
But the phone part.
Go on, tell me more how.
So he calls it the Wile E. Coyote effect. Right. It's on the edge, then it falls off. He shows searches for BBM for iPhone, BBM for Android, and how it went. So he just uses this as the way to talk about waves of disruption. And how with COVID, things like e-commerce, he starts with newspapers. He looks at U.S. is massively overstored. We have 24 square feet per capita for retail in the U.S.
We
versus
that.
Five in the U.S.
See, the problem with the Wile E. Coyote thing is that thanks to COVID, you've got all these cliffs that all of these businesses are running.
That's what he's saying. Yeah. This is gonna push them. Yeah. So it was an interesting post for folks who care about this.
I mean,
kind of
I can't
stuff.
Imagine indoor malls surviving this. Can you?
There were a dead beast anyway. Department stores were unnecessary anyway.
Right. U.S. pay TV subs are down 20% and falling. Cable companies suffering big time. As Netflix, which is the gray bar, goes up. Comcast and the others go down.
And here, for all my newspaper people who scream about how Google stole our money, more than two-thirds of Google and Facebook ad spend is from advertisers that were never in traditional advertising at all.
That was the big story, thanks to Australia, and a real debate going on right now because, of course, and we talked about this a little bit last week, Australian regulators look like they're about to make Google start paying for the snippets that they include in Google News and Google Search. And a lot of people are saying bravo, because it's all Google's fault that journalism is dying. And I knew that you would be grurring.
Well, I did a law. So Ben Smith, the former editor of BuzzFeed News, now the David Carr or would-be David Carr of the New York Times, wrote a column which was pure Murdoch company line in favor of that Australian stuff.
Right.
And I went through a Twitter typhoon thereabout.
Oh, I like it. A Twitter typhoon.
Not just a storm. It was a typhoon.
What is doom scrolling?
So doom scrolling, I found this. It's kind of cool. So people are complaining that, oh, my God, we're all just doom scrolling. We're going through all this news about COVID now.
Yes.
And it's driving us nuts.
Yes.
And we're awful. Well, of course, when these things happen, just like any good
moral
panic,
you're looking for information. You want to know what it means. Yeah.
So during World War One. There was much complaint that people had too much thirst for war news.
Right.
In Saturday Review in 1915, talked about the part that newspapers played the first 2 years of the war with cruel ignorance for news. I'm sorry, cruel eagerness for news tortured everybody. When even the poor spent their pence recklessly, as if pennies and halfpence were coined in every
excessive
household for the benefit of extra special.
Newspaper reading had a tendency to throw some people off their balance.
So it was a cool little piece. And so I went from that. I went doom clicking and then found great stuff about how books, of course, were presumed to be terrible, especially for you women, Stacey. They're going to cause vapors. Romances were very bad for
me. Oh, yeah, the novels. Novels were terrible. No, women were only supposed to read smart novel or like novels as opposed to like policy Non-fiction. Papers and things
yes,
for
that
men.
Would be bad.
But there were magazines for women early on in the history of magazines. Yes, there are now, but they're early on in the history. It was the first kind of publishing that was directed to women. So that was that doom scrolling. I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, we're all doing it. It's not that it's bad to look for that information. It just can make you nuts, right? You get over.
Well, as the world
that's
itself.
That's how I feel about everything coming out of the White House in this administration, all their press releases. I'm like, oh, no.
It's kind of hard not to watch the press conferences. It was so funny yesterday. It's kind of hard not to watch. And by the way, I know you're going to send me emails saying I'm never listening to the show again if you bash our fine president. How can anybody at this point be thinking? I have to think you're a Russian bot at this point. If you think that this is that 80,000 people dead is in some way a success. Right. I don't understand how you can still be.
Leo, it's China's fault.
Oh, it's all, yeah.
China.
The Kung Flu, yeah.
Let's not talk about politics.
No, I'm not. I'm not, because I want to talk about podcasting. Luminary has now raised another $30 million. Who would give these guys more money? They've raised $30 million, not trying to build their business, just trying to shore it up as it collapses. They have now raised their $160 million to do this podcast network. Former HBO executive Richard Plepler, who's quite famous. I mean, he put HBO on the map. Also, the NEA and Sinai Ventures raised $130 million. They wanted it to be the Netflix of podcasts. That was the elevator pitch right there. That's all you had to say. Oh, it's the Netflix of podcasts.
Right.
Here's $130 million. Only 80,000 people who tried the app are still paying. They're losing money hand over fist. So they've raised another $30 million, but it's not because they're doing great. It's because they're doing terribly. They're burning $4 million a month before the coronavirus outbreak, while generating less than $500,000 in monthly revenue. We make more money than they did. I mean, our revenue was higher than theirs was, but I didn't lose $4 million a month. I actually made money at it. But that's,
and you never took any money.
Yeah. And thank God I didn't take any money. So listening is still growing, according to Bloomberg. The decline is beginning to level off. And you asked me before the show, I don't know what our numbers are. I'm not paying attention to that. I'll tell you, that's not really in all likelihood.
Yeah, I wasn't curious about the numbers so much as trends. Yeah.
That's not really the issue so much as listening numbers. I'm sure they're going up, but it's advertisers because we're headed into a Great Depression. And I don't blame advertisers. They're very skittish and they're reluctant to spend money. Even if they have a product like Zoom that's doing really, really well, they don't need to advertise. I don't think they're buying any ads.
So I'll go to a number I have. Rasmus Kleist Nielsen at Oxford's Reuters Center for the Study of Journalism, or News Journalism, I think it is, said that he predicts the print circulation revenue will be down 10%, print ad revenue down 30%, digital circulation revenue up 20%, but digital ad revenue down 20%.
That's
working
the problem.
From that, he figures
more people
a decline of $24 billion. That's the same as the decline from 2013 to 2019 in 1 year.
So audience is going up, revenue going down because...
Yes, the advertisers are... what do they have to sell? Yeah.
Well, what we're trying to do is there's plenty of companies that are booming on all this, and we're trying to focus on them. But, the companies like Zoom and Netflix don't need to advertise. They're doing just fine. So you're trying to find smaller companies that, maybe see this as an opportunity. Work
well, the thing you've always done in this network is to change habits. I never thought of buying a razor through the mail. Oh, okay, I'll do that. Right.
I never
thought of buying a mattress through the mail.
Right.
Well, gee, now I have to. Well, here's a way.
But you got to figure these companies are going well. But are we going to have? What's our business going to do? And I think many businesses are declining. I don't know, but. I just there's just uncertainty is the worst possible thing. Their business may be going up, but they're uncertain. So that's the problem. And I don't think it's only Luminary's fault. I think it's a tough time. Actually,
oh, have a little Schadenfreude. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Jeff Katzenberg says, you know, Quibi would have been a big hit if it weren't for COVID-19.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Here's one that's going to give you a heart attack. France.
Oh, no.
And I love.
Just leave that there.
I love France. France has decided that platforms will have 1 hour to remove pedophile or terrorism-related content or be face a fine of up to 4% of their global revenue.
Ooh, that's a GDPR number right there.
That's a big number. Companies like Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Snapchat will have 24 hours to remove manifestly illicit content. But
not manifestly illegal, manifestly illicit.
Illicit. What's the difference? I don't know.
One's prescribed by law, and one is just social mores, it's right?
If you don't take this down, your ass is grass.
Clearly illicit. We do not smoke marijuana in France. We drink wine.
I think it's probably more like we don't let you sell or show off Hitler and Nazi paraphernalia.
But the 1 hour is for hate speech and pedophilia. And Justice Minister Nicole Belloubet told Parliament, people will think twice before crossing the red line. If they know there is a high likelihood, they will be held to account.
All right, France, you made me do it. You made me do it. I read the entire, just the last 3 days, it took me 3 days to get through it, the entire Areopagitica by Milton.
Ay, ay, ay. You did that because of France?
With quotes. No, it was England. It was when there was an effort to do licensing.
Ah.
And Milton was arguing, don't insult us. And I'll give you my favorite quote from it. Give me the liberty to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to conscience above all liberties.
Well, France. He's right in the Marine Le Pen's pocket because she's, of course, the far-right National Rally Party president. Said the law is a serious violation of the freedom of expression. I don't know what's going to happen, but 4% of your global revenue and an hour seems a little fast. An hour
it's
seems
kind of,
like...
It's ridiculous.
Wow.
That's ridiculous. So anything, although, think about the incentive to develop technology, if it could be developed.
Maybe that's what they're
trying
to
do. That's a big incentive to get you to
Yeah, but you know it can't work. Because I mean, look at China, where they have extremely expensive, extremely efficient censorship mechanisms, and people find ways around by creating new languages.
Right,
it will always happen. Well, this is always the case. It's like trying to keep you from reading novels and having the vapors, Stacey. It's always through history.
The
a new mechanism of speech comes, and there's an effort to control it. And that's all that's happening now.
E-commerce sales like nobody's business. It's like it's Black Friday. U.S. e-commerce sales jumped 49% last month.
Well, you can't go to a store. How are you going to get your sourdough or your bread knives?
Well, right. This is Adobe's Digital Economy Index. Online grocery helped drive the increase in sales with a 110% boost in daily sales between March and April. Electronics sales up 58%. This one you'll be both happy about. Book sales have doubled.
Yay.
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 What are you doing at home? What are you doing? You're reading. You're reading more.
Or no, you know what you're doing, Leo?
What?
You're stocking your Zoom bookshelf behind you.
I bet a lot of it is that.
There's a bookstore.
Book by the foot.
That's offering that as a service.
Yeah.
I think it's in Boston, Brattle Books, and they will curate the books to be behind you to make you look good.
Oh, I like that.
Man, I don't buy physical books because they're hard to move.
They're
too much.
You're just going to fail at Rate My Skype Room.
Yeah.
In fact, Stacey, you know.
This is not a great
I'm sorry,
room. You're right.
But you're about a 4 out of 10 right there.
Wait.
The printer is still in the scene.
Oh, yes. Check out my picture. Let's see.
It's not even hung.
Never
it's just
hung.
Sitting on the file cabinet.
Wait 2 months.
Yeah, you're moving.
But look at that.
That's fair.
Loose. Is it loose lips? No, keep mum. She's not so dumb. It's feminist.
Oh, I like it.
And
keep mum. She's not so dumb. She's kind of
so
cute.
I just put in the chat so you can put it in the Brattle Book story.
That is good. That is good.
Yeah.
Folks.
Last week I had flowers too.
I like the keep mum. She's not so dumb. That is pretty awesome. By the way.
Why don't you hang it up?
I have to.
I'm in a rental.
She will in the new place. She's going to hang it. By the way, I have to say, rate my Skype room. It's very first 10 out of 10. Dr. William Hazeltine, infectious disease expert, who not only has a full skeleton, but he's got a giant Saturn V rocket ship. And it looks like some sort of Egyptian pyramid plus bones. This is the best. And
highly polished. By the way,
wearing a Nehru
jacket.
You have a Nehru jacket?
No, it's not Nehru. That's a Bavarian jacket.
Ah.
Is it okay to wear it, you think?
Yeah, wear your Bavarian jacket. Let your free flag fly. 10 out of 10. Is that his house?
That's his office. I don't know whether it's his house or not.
Crikey. I'm very jealous.
He's brilliant. Hazeltine is brilliant.
Clearly.
He discovered like great things that save people's
lives.
He discovered like great things.
I discovered the moon.
He's not German.
Oh.
He just wears the German jacket.
A Bavarian jacket with a pocket.
He's known for his groundbreaking work on HIV/AIDS and the human genome.
Oh, good for him.
He was a professor at Harvard Medical School, where he founded two research departments on cancer and HIV/AIDS.
Man, I love that room. He also has the bookshelf, but is carefully positioned it so you can't read it anyway. So it doesn't. There's no status. But just what the hell is the giant rocket?
Room.
Well, yeah, it's a giant room.
Who doesn't want a Saturn V rocket?
That's a great rocket.
His grandchildren like it, he said.
Oh, man, I like that rocket.
I have seen one of the original ones at the big NASA facility in Houston.
Nice.
I have pictures next to it.
Are you just a little tiny person in a giant, giant rocket?
Basically, yes.
That's cool. That's Stacey Higginbotham, who is a giant in my mind. She is the host of the IoT show with Kevin Toefel and does a great newsletter, Stacey on IoT. At StaceyOnIoT.com. She's at GigaStacey. I am sorry, I got hiccups. I'm sorry. Never happened.
Did we not do picks?
Oh.
Feeling today.
Change log. He's trying to get out of something. He's tired.
Right. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
I showed captions.
She is going to give you her pick of the week.
I unfortunately did not bring it upstairs, but I'll go get the August. It's Stacey? The new August lock and it's smaller and Stacey? I thought you guys might like to see it,
Stacey?
But no.
You could have just let it slide.
Yeah.
You could have just let me Stacey. Finish the show, but no, you said, what about my pick? And you don't even have it.
Well, I was going to bring y'all downstairs on my computer and show
it
to you.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, let's do it.
Now, you're going to lose my good audio. Karsten,
right.
Is that going to be okay for you?
Karsten's somewhere in space. We don't
know. Can't hear Karsten. He's crying in silence.
He's on the chat. Okay.
He's going.
If you want to start while I go wander downstairs.
Jeff, why don't
you give us
another number? You already gave us one.
I was all happy that we were going to do this, and now I got to do it? Jeez.
You already did
that. I'm like, what's that kid's name that you hated? Timothy?
Stephen Gravatt. I'm probably going to get sued.
This can't be real.
What?
This number about the ants?
Yes, go ahead. 1.8 million people are pretending to be ants in a Facebook group.
What?
I know. It makes no sense at all.
Does it make them happy?
I think it's cute.
It's kind of boring. I signed on to it so I could see what it was. It's very boring.
Okay. That's our number of the week. I have a pick. For a change, should we watch Stacey wander?
Yeah,
I'm there.
Oh my God!
Oh,
there's the August lock.
This is the new August lock. That's me manually doing it, just because here I am.
Yeah,
and it's actually much smaller. I have mine at a higher level because of this wood trim. It was a little difficult. What you'll see, it's smaller because, bloop, it has new batteries. It's not four AAAs or AAs.
Are those hard to get?
They are. You're going to have to keep those in your house.
Okay.
So
I like the magnetic plate. That's nice.
The other one had that too.
Yeah.
And what else?
It's also subtle. It doesn't look like anything. It just looks like a knob. Is that a sensor? What is that on the face of it?
This is the August. It'll light up in a second.
Oh, it's a light. Okay.
So here we go. Ready?
And does this work in conjunction with your existing, because you have a lock on there?
So this is more like a deadbolt turner.
Got it. Do you have an existing? Oh, look, it's going to do it.
Ooh,
here it goes.
Did it.
The red eye is awake.
It turns green when it's unlocked.
Oh, that's nice. What's it look like on the other side? Does it have a, does it show on the other side? Is it?
So it looks like a regular lock. So what I was saying, it's a regular lock. So on the other side, your key still works.
Nice.
Oh. My dog is going to leave.
So this would be, you would use this to open the door remotely.
Yes. Well, it auto unlocks with the Bluetooth in your phone. So
oh,
if you're
nice. Oh, I like
walking
this.
Up to your door. Yeah. They also have.
Oh, poor dog. Mom, you opened the door.
Come on. I want to go out. Oh, can I read to her?
Yeah, you can read to my dog. She's not going to like it, but yeah, I'm sitting here kneeling and she's like, why are you so close to me and not petting me? It also has an auto lock. So if you walk away from your door, it will lock.
Oh, nice.
And it locks also after a period of time if you have that setting.
I do not
because I walk outside in the backyard a lot without my phone. And
so there was an existing deadbolt on there. And because it's a rental, you'll be able to remove that and restore it to its original state without any effort.
Yeah, let's show you how that works. There's these little wings. Bloop.
Oh, neat. Look at that. Oh, it goes right on top of where the and knob would be, where the bolt, the thing would be.
Yeah, so this is a custom clever. August plate, but you just swap out this for the original plate.
Easy.
This is what actually turns your knob, and every doorknob has a different shape right
yes.
here.
That's not the shape of my knob, but it's okay. I get the idea, the principle.
And then you just pop this guy back out. It's really easy to install.
I like that. So it's really just like a robot knob turner for you.
It is. It is. That's exactly how you should think of it.
Yeah. Nice. That's from August. How much?
$249.99.
Thank you. My pick of the week is something for Jeff Jarvis, because I know how he feels about profanity. Finally, there is a font that won't print profanity. Scunthorpe Sans.
Oy.
It's a joke, but it really works because, as some people know, fonts aren't really just pictures of letters. They're programs, typefaces. And this is a nice font called Aileron. It's public domain. It uses it actually has some intelligence to combine letters into a single ligature, which is a black mark. You can
ligature is like FI or FL, which puts two letters into one.
But they can do it for UCK or HIT. Isn't that good?
Clever.
And it's named after the town of Scunthorpe, which for obvious reasons, it really wishes it had a different name. But the good news is it doesn't actually block Scunthorpe because, as the authors of this font, vol.wtf, say that town has suffered enough. So you can literally use Scunthorpe Sans. You download it. It's a font.
That's pretty funny.
Just looks like any other font. But go ahead, try to swear. We should use this in our chat room. And you won't be.
Oh, that would be very funny,
wouldn't it? It would just. Of course, our chat.
You would just pull the Chinese kind of censorship thing, and you just use different words. Yeah. You do exactly what Jeff tells. Right.
Our chatters are way too smart. It wouldn't, fool them for one second. Hey, this was fun. I feel so much better now after that great Google change log.
And the picks.
And really good picks. Thank you, guys. Jeff Jarvis is the director of the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism. Jeff pocketed it. I can read that for the entrepreneurial journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of
New York.
That's the important part. Thank you, Jeff. It's great to have you. He blogs at buzzmachine.com. And Stacy, I already mentioned Stacy on IoT.com. Together they make this show. I'm just the meat in the Jeff and Stacy sandwich. No, that's I'm the Vegemite in the Stacy. Hey, don't forget, speaking of things that are coming up, we have a wonderful event for you tomorrow. A LastPass event with Steve Gibson, Jerry Buchelt, who's the CISO at Log Me In, and my friend Andrew Keene, who is kind of a digital naysayer. They're all great. We're going to talk about the future of identity. It's a special event for LastPass. Now, normally we'd be doing this, you know, in a venue or a theater, but obviously we're not going to do that. So we're going to stream it live to you starting 1 p.m. Thursday, the 14th. That's 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's 20 hours UTC. It's going to be a fun event, and we will be streaming that live. There'll be an hour of conversation. We'll also have a Twitter tag that you can use to ask questions. We'll answer those questions also. And if you can't make it at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, please download it from the Twit events feed. It'll be up there shortly thereafter. That's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. Our second LastPass event, not our last. We do Twig this week in Google every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Want to watch us do it live? Believe it or not, you can. All you have to do is go to twit.tv/live. There's streaming audio and video there. So you can even ask your Google or your Amazon voice assistant, hey, play Twit Live. And in most cases, it'll actually just start the live stream. There's always something going on at Twit. If you're listening to the stream, you should probably be typing in the chat room, which kind of follows along at irc.twit.tv. And if you ever get a little lonely, there's somebody there 24/7 because we have listeners all over the world in every time zone. So nice people. Jeff pocketed it. Nice people at irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of this show available at our website, as everything is, twit.tv/twig. There's also a subscribe button there. If you push it, you'll figure you could get the information you need to subscribe in your favorite podcast client, or just search for This Week in Google and subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically. You don't even have to think about it. It'll just be there whenever you need it. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android, where each week I'm joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and a rotating crew of Android journalists, developers, and enthusiasts, where we talk about the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA or find the show in your podcatcher of choice. That's All About Android.